This is the Radio Free Cybertron 15th Anniversary Show. This is Radio Free Cybertron with your host, Brian Kilby, featuring Chris, Don, Rob, Diecast, John, and Melvar. For the latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com.
This is Radio Free Cybertron. I'm your host, Brian Kilby. Today is...
It's the 15th of October.
It's 15th of October. That day has some sort of significance.
Yeah, it strikes...
Yeah, Rhinox farted.
Probably. So this is our 15th anniversary.
Yay!
I am really old. This is a reminder of how old I am. So,
I've literally been doing this for half of my life.
I've been doing it for almost half of my life.
Don't do that.
I've been literally doing it for half of my life because, you know.
Guys, our show's a freshman in high school.
Our show is older than some of our listeners.
That's true.
Hi, kids.
And as someone pointed out on Facebook, I think RFC is now as far away from the beginning of RFC as it was from the beginning of the Transformers.
Yeah.
I don't like this show anymore. Can we do a new one?
Yeah, I know. I'm seriously thinking about doing, I don't know, a Digimon show or something.
I don't know about you guys, but it really doesn't bother me.
It's great. It's awesome. It's just a moment of reflection. So this is episode 387. It's our 15th anniversary show. Again, I am Brian Kilby. With me this week, we have Don, Chris / XV, Diecast, Melvar, The Robs, and John DeLuna.
The Robs.
Well, so in the new
Double
intro,
Trouble.
In the new intro, it just says Rob instead of Rob Clay or Rob Springer. So you can just figure out whichever one it is you're listening to the show.
I'm now imagining both of them in like Double Dragon.
And everybody on the show right now is in the intro, which is because I have a new intro.
Which side of the coin did you get?
So, you know, since you have it as just Rob, you should just put that in there twice.
Yes. It should be exactly right after each other without a delay. Rob.
Rob. And Rob.
Rob. So, Don, like, this is my brother Rob. This is my other brother Rob.
Right. I thought that was his screen name. No, it's not.
So, a few things I want to get out of the way before we dive into things. Being our 15th anniversary, that means you should follow us on Twitter at TF Radio. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/TF Radio.
And subscribe to us on YouTube.
It's YouTube, a really long screen name. Just Google. Google is your friend. You know, in the course of the show, we have quite a few things. We have an interview with our pals, Jim Sorensen and Bill Forster, about the new book, Transformers Legacy, which is now shipping from Amazon. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I recorded a segment, which is basically a mini episode of the classic RFC, where I actually go in and redo some of our old, skits. They are kind of skits, but segments. Literal classic segments that I was able to find the notes to 15 years later. Almost 15 years later. It's kind of crazy. So we'll see how that works out.
How many floppy disks did you have to dig through for that?
I was running the CD at that point. And this is actually stuff I used the old web server that your website was hosted on. I used that as my backup. So that was my hard drive backup. So fortunately I had all that.
Now, it was 99, so how long did it take you to burn it to the CD, though?
It was about 8 minutes. It was a 16x CD run.
Wow, we had a 4x. It was like start burning a CD, go to school.
Well, not bad.
Yeah, go come home. Hey, maybe it'll work.
8 minutes is actually really speedy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we also have a segment which is actually the pilot episode of a new podcast that we're going to be doing called Transformers 101, where we cover a topic. We're going to start off with a year. We're going to cover G1 year by year. We start off with part one of 1984, and that was a lot of fun. Due to the tornadoes, XV could not join us, but hopefully for the next one he'll be there. So we have that. We have Q&A with Rob Springer. I have a couple other things. We have the news. It's a jam-packed show. Diecast is going to recount New York Comic Con. We have a lot to get through. So
we're going to be here forever.
Did anyone else notice the humor and the fact that, well, XV couldn't be there because there was a tornado?
Well, there wasn't really a tornado. Kilby's just being Kilby.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still...
Like, it's not like the time recording my podcast when there actually was a tornado in Oklahoma City and JD had to take off from his computer and go take shelter and left his microphone open.
Dude, use your phone. What you doing?
Yeah. Speaking of JD, that's I'm glad you mentioned that. Of course, in the last 15 years, we lost our good friend JD Church. And I want to point everyone to the anniversary episode that we did. Pardon me, the memorial episode that we did on our return anniversary show, which is the anniversary of our return to full-time podcasting back in June. That was, I don't think we can say any more than that. So please, please check that out. And also, there is going to be no live show next week, so keep that in mind. And if you are a member of Reddit, please give us a thumbs up. Go to tfradio.net, click on the episode at the bottom of the page. There's going to be a little thumbs up icon. We would really like that.
Well, you know, Brian, there's no live show next week unless you're at TFCon, where the show's not going to stop for like 3 days straight.
Yeah, it's going to be a 72-hour live show.
No, it's going to be a lot of farting.
Maybe we'll hit record. Maybe we'll remember hit record at the right time.
Yeah, we'll see how that works. Okay. So
the RFC live podcast marathon.
I know. So
yeah, or you could name it the RFC butt dial podcast.
That happens too often. Like, I've butt dialed too many of my online friends in the last few years. It's really sad. People that I rarely ever see outside of BotCon.
Yeah, I was thought you were mad for a minute.
Oh man. So let's see here. So first, let me also mention that I was up until about 2 or 2:30 working on the show for today. So I'm going to be drinking lots of energy drinks. Thank God for Big Lots. 50 cents for these stack or two energy drinks. I bought like 50 of them. So I'm going to be going through these.
I'm starting to just start considering drinking Black Blood of the Earth Pure. You know, that's pure caffeine.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where we get scary caffeine, Brian. It's you have to buy it by the vial when the scientist makes up a batch. It's he's distilled coffee to its purest essence. It's like a black tar substance. You put like a drop in like maybe a cup of milk or something, and don't drink any more caffeine or rest day you'll die.
How do I get this?
You have to Google it. It's his website. It's a scientist. He just sells his food science online, and basically he'll make up a batch. Like, all right, I got some vials set up. I don't think it's legal. Because, I mean, you got to stop and say, there's no FDA
really
regulation.
It sounds legal. It sounds like...
So it's like a step above Hemorrhage is what you're saying.
It sounds like it's third-party coffee broken.
Well, just think about this for a second. You know your Tide Ultra? It's like superpower Tide in like a quarter of the amount. So essentially, you're drinking a case of coffee in a drop.
So, also, real quick, before I'm forgetting about it, I just want to thank our live chat out there. You guys are awesome. I see that Mark's in the chat in honor of our 15th anniversary. Good to see you guys.
You.
So, thank you guys. Again, tfradio.net/live, each and every Wednesday, except for next Wednesday.
We'll be live in person.
We'll be live in person.
We are eating so much junk food next week, guys.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I lost 25 pounds at one BotCon. I don't know if I mentioned that. I packed my entire... Every single meal.
Was that 05 when you ate nothing but Slim Fest bars?
Yes, that was 05. I had one meal. I had one meal at that Chinese. I had orange chicken at that Chinese place in the mall.
I remember telling you, it's like, because the hotel gave us free food. It's like, dude, I got free breakfast. And you're like, I brought protein bars. Like, no, man, omelets.
I know. I lost 25 pounds. Okay, so this week in history, Radio Free Cybertron started. So in honor of that, I have a few things that have happened in the real world and in Transformers since RFC started back in 1999. Okay. I actually printed this out. It's not in the show notes. So, let's see here. Let's go ahead and do Transformers stuff. No, okay. Well, no, we'll do real stuff. So, in 1999, XV, sorry. Let's see here. So the new millennium, the third millennium that actually started since since RFC started. Y2K, anybody remember that?
Yep.
I still have my prevention kit I bought on clearance in 2002.
Yeah, I know. let's see here. AOL purchased Time Warner for stupid amounts of money. YouTube launched. PlayStation 2, GameCube,
Google
Xbox,
purchased it for stupid amounts of money.
Xbox 360. Yeah, I think it was $1 billion.
Media One
AOL
got
had that kind of money?
Yeah.
Media One got taken over by Comcast in Atlanta.
Facebook, two U.S. presidents elected. India passed 1 billion people. WWF purchased WCW.
Horrible day in history.
Yay.
Yeah.
Let's see. The iPod happened. Of course, you know, we predate the iPod and iTunes, so therefore podcast.
We're internet radio.
About 975 Transformers podcasts. Twitter. Pluto was demoted to a dwarf planet. The Higgs boson was identified. Edward Snowden and all this NSA crap happened. In fact, in 1999, Beast Wars ended and Beast Machines debuted. Bill Clinton was still president of the United States.
Man, that was a good time.
I know. The euro was established.
What's that?
I put a lot
money.
I put some astronomy crap in here. Pluto's eccentric orbit had it closer to us than Neptune, and that won't happen again until 2231. I think that's pretty cool. Bill Gates' personal fortune exceeded $100 billion. Wayne Gretzky retired. Don, this one's for you. Microsoft released Windows 98 Second Edition.
Which I never used. I used First Edition.
Star Wars Episode 1 happened. Napster was founded. All of that in 1999. So, go ahead.
For it just kind of occurred to me. We went through an entire Spider-Man movie series and its reboot and second sequel since...
You sure did. Oh, check this crap out. In Transformers, what have we had since 1999?
Man.
A car robot.
Everything.
Yeah, I know. Dreamwave and all the dull surprise that came with it.
Think about this. 03 is when we found out Don Murphy got the license.
Oh, yeah.
05 when we found out he was actually making a movie instead of just talking about it on forums.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part 4, I mean, who out there remembers the just development?
I remember it.
That was better than the movie.
It sure was. So, four of those movies, Armada, Energon, Cybertron, Transformers Animated, Transformers Prime, the new Robots in the Sky series, lots of video games. And I actually have a count of this stuff. In that time, we've had about 406 comics come out.
We are on the third Xbox.
We had 321 episodes from the various seasons series come out. And over 3,500 toys.
And wow. Five people watched Firefly in the meantime.
Yeah.
I went there. Two watched the movie.
I'm so glad you're here, Rob.
Yeah, I know.
5,000 tweeted about how great it was.
That doesn't add up.
That was just this week, Rob.
Hey, it is no secret my disdain for that overrated series, okay? Yeah. Boring
send
game.
All my disdain emails. More for the fandom that won't shut up about it 13 years later.
Rob@tfradio.net.
Yes. Rob, send a hate mail. I will gladly say, hey, I don't like the show. Give me a break.
Yeah. So, Diecast.
Yes.
You were at New York Comic Con last week.
I was.
How was that?
There was lots of cosplay. And I learned that cosplay does not equal consent. Big signs.
I'm glad finally people got taught that lesson. Like, a costume.
Apparently it doesn't work because, you know, the female cosplayers were still getting groped. But the big things for me for New York Comic Con was the RID panel on Thursday where we saw the two new trailers, I guess you could say, or parts of the show. And we basically learned that B was sent to Earth by Prime because basically a ship carrying all these captured Decepticons crashed on Earth, and now all these Decepticons are loose, just running around everywhere.
I like this premise.
And it's basically like now B has a team that he doesn't want. And he also doesn't want to be on Earth. Like I guess he feels like that's not a good enough mission for him.
That sounds pretty awesome, Diecast.
So, but the weird thing is it's going to be this... It basically seems like it's going to be this hunt for a different Decepticon every week sort of thing. And I was curious what you guys thought about it. And, you know, because basically that means we're not going to have, like, a leader Decepticon, at least not so far in this first series.
Do they have a megaphone?
They don't have a megaphone.
Do they have the Radio Free Cybertron megaphone?
They do have a Rob Decepticon, though, because the Decepticon that we saw was like a lobster.
Named
Rock Lobster.
That looked pretty awesome, too, I have to say. I thought that looked pretty cool.
His name is Bisque.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't enjoy creativity?
I know.
Well, the people complaining, but...
Yeah.
So that was pretty neat. You got to hang out with the Ant. What else?
Got to hang out with the Ant. The IDW panel, which was awesome. It was the first time I ever talked to or heard John Barber, and he was really good. He kept my attention through the whole...
Did you talk with him? Did you speak with him?
I did speak with him a little bit.
Did you tell him who you were and how important you were?
I told him who I was, and I told him we were important. He says, oh yeah, you guys are definitely important.
That's all it really takes.
That's all that matters.
And, yeah. But I guess the biggest thing out of all the comics for me, since I'm not really a comic person, although I do want to start reading more comics, was the Combiner Wars comic that's coming out. They showed a cover, and they had Menasor and Superion on the cover, which we knew. You know, those are the two Combiner Wars figures that we know about. And then I asked, you know, is there going to be anything else? I know you guys may not be able to say. And Margaret Scott goes, well, the one I can tell you starts with a D and ends in Fensor. And I knew Brian would be really excited about that one. So I was excited. She didn't say Computron yet. So maybe
so it's
the
Protecticons.
The series goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember the Protecticons?
Oh, yeah.
I actually owned that URL. Sorry,
yeah,
that was a terrible thing. And
guy's an expert at Transformers.
That was awful of me to actually make a big deal of Protecticons. He was probably nervous when he did that interview, but still, Protecticons.
No. We've never seen him fully performed. The toys behind you.
I forgot about that part.
We've never seen Omega Supreme. You know his name, right? It's because you saw him.
Sorry.
Jerk.
And they also said, of course, Devastator. So I would almost guarantee that those are two toys that we'll get in the Combiner Wars if those are the two that were mentioned.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on record and say don't hold your breath for a Devastator toy.
Really?
I want one that has Doll Surprise.
It doesn't fit the play pattern.
I want one made up of repaints of the Protectobots. Just really get those people crying.
I think Devastator could work. All they have to do is they'll come out with the four limbs as deluxes, and then maybe it won't be a Voyager price point. Maybe it'll be like a couple dollars more, but put, you know, two deluxe size figures in a single pack.
No.
And that way those two can combine. Can still combine other limbs with it.
Well, see, Doc asked, if they do a four-person combiner set, they're going to recolor Landfill from RID and have that come back out as Devastator.
That's actually not a bad idea.
I would buy it.
They can do a set of four and engineer them to also transform into that and then, you know, do the recolor as Landfill and incorporate that into IDW.
Or we could just get the MicroMaster, you know, Devastator from Revenge of the Fallen.
Like, just upscale it.
Yeah.
I just don't want a five-person Devastator. I want my six-person.
Which is why
a four-person Devastator.
Well, we've
already had that.
The Legends class figures are basically designed to be the sixth characters to some of these combiners. I wonder if that's how they'll work a sixth character in Devastator somehow.
Hey, guys.
Can you imagine just the outrage the fandom will have if one of the constructed cons is a legend among a Voyager and four other deluxes?
They're going
that
to anyway.
Be great.
They're going to anyway. Let's really bait them then.
Yeah. Nope. And also, then we can get a Proud swap into the, swap in there as a Legends.
What about the six builder repaint a while back?
Yeah, upscale that.
Yeah, upscale.
Like with the static like pelvis piece and everything.
I love those.
That's like my favorite Devastator.
Yeah. It's nice. But actually, so diecast, I said no, and it's not going to happen, but I've been wrong, i.e. G1 reissues. I might have been wrong about that. I might have said those would never, ever in a million years happen. And they kind of did. That's one thing that I might have
said. I said
G1
would never come
back. We also said that victory with ball joints would never happen. And we got that, Black Shadow.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
So.
Hey. Get used to it. G1's never coming back.
Yeah.
You know, Deathy was just right from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the sad fact we have to live with as Transformers fans. Deathy was right all along.
Guys, Alternators is the best it's going to get, okay?
And I hate to say it. Oh, God.
That is true.
I hate to say it. But if you buy it, public service announcement. I don't mean this with any... I don't mean this to sound bad, but if you buy used toys, wash them in your bathtub first. Seven people will get that.
Hey.
Yeah.
For the other couple,
like
for
three of them
are here. For the other few thousand that won't, I apologize.
I told you all I did not want to know what you were talking about. You told me anyway, and ew.
No, this isn't the hot gluing, Don. This is something else. Although I guess it's related.
You know, I can't help but to take that seriously when I found that brown Jetfire at a BotCon years ago. Like, right about the same time he posted that, too. It was 01. I'm, like, looking through the... Remember when I used to have dump bins full of just toys for real cheap?
Yeah.
The ones you wanted. And I was like, oh, hey, it's Jet... Is that Chewbacca? No, it's Jetfire. Gross. I'm putting it... Wash my hands. Full bottle of Purell.
Done.
Okay. Get me some SARS.
So, sorry. I forgot about SARS. Anything else, Diecast?
Just the Hasbro press event, which was...
Oh, how awesome was that? You did a great, 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 great job with all the photos.
It was awesome. I was so focused. I was actually the first one through the door, and I was like, gotta get photos, gotta get photos.
I could tell.
And then...
We got lots of retweets.
I took all these photos, and then it was 8 o'clock after I talked to you guys on the phone and everything. And I turned around, and there's this huge line, and I'm like, "What is this line for?" And that's when I walked up to the one lady that was there, and she was like, "Oh, you get in line, and we scan your face, and we put it on either an Iron Man or a Captain America figure." So I was like, "Okay, well, I don't really have anything else to do right now, so I'll jump in line." So I waited in line for 2 hours to get my face scanned so it could be put onto an action figure. And apparently they ship it out 6 weeks later.
Totally cool. Totally cool.
Did you make a funny face where you're all "Yeah, deuces"?
No, well, the
Facebook.
Thing is, it's like a Kinect that moves as you're looking at straight, mm-hmm. and you actually have to hold your same face pose for about 90 seconds. So you can't really, I didn't even want to smile because I'm I can't hold a smile for, 90 seconds.
Right. Now, so, did they do the, dot matrix across your face, or was it just a straight up scan of you?
It was basically a straight up scan.
Well, that's cool.
Well,
it was a Kinect in this machine, and it moved, mm-hmm. From the left and then to the right, and then went back to center. And by the time it did that, it was about 90 seconds.
Are you going
seconds.
To review yourself when you get it?
Dude.
That would be awesome.
I feel like it's probably going to be one of those things. I'm going to get it in the mail, and I'm going to be like, ooh, that's creepy. And just put it in the side.
Are you going to dress it as Robin?
That would be awesome.
Well, Doc asked, if it comes and it scans your face properly, it couldn't have been Kinect because that means it actually recognized you. So there's no way it could be
connected. Nice, Don. Nice. So, yeah, awesome, Diecast. That's great. You have a write-up of the IDW panel at our blog, which is tfradio.net/blog. I just posted that today because I'm great
awesome.
Like that. I'm very timely. So, yeah. So, okay, so let's go ahead and jump to the news. So, I specifically don't have a lot of news because... We did a lot of news last week. It's our 15th anniversary show, and I just want to talk about what I want to talk about. So, this is...
We tried to do a lot of news last week, but then everything died, and we kind of didn't, so...
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, one thing I did want to talk about, though, was the Ultimetal Prime. So, 15 years ago, this is not something I would have ever expected to see. This is that highly... highly expensive Optimus Prime statue. It's not really highly articulated. I mean, I guess if you count panels and stuff, it would be highly articulated. But it's this just hyper expensive Optimus Prime statue. It's what, $1,000?
Oh, yeah. I think 800.
No,
in between 800 and 1,000, I think. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But yeah, it's there and it's expensive.
It's a lot bigger than I thought.
I kind of want it. Yeah. Oh, you saw it in person?
No, no. They have a comparison photo with MP01 and MP10, and it's about double the size of MP01.
Holy, I didn't realize it was that big.
There's also one where it comes up to, with Metroplex, where it comes up to just under the boxy part of the torso.
Neat. Okay, so my internet's crapping now. I can't show it. Here's one. Here's a very sort of a grainy photo of it.
But yeah, for $800, it does do a decent amount. I mean, it does have some articulation, which, you know, better than nothing. The eyes light up and the faceplate moves as it talks. And almost the entire outer shell comes out and attaches magnetically.
So it's sort of like that Solid Chogokin and Mazinger they came out with last year.
Kinda.
Is a really awesome Mazinger Z that came out?
Yeah, they came out. Solid Chogokin as a line from Japan that does high end collectibles along the same lines of what this Unimental Prime is, just not as expensive. But their Mazinger last year included the hanger, and the Mazinger was basically a cross cut design that you could take the armor off half the body if you wanted to and show like one side inner workings and then one side normal.
Yeah, I'm sure you remember what the closing credits of Transor Z looked like, Brian.
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 100. So the GX-45 Mazinger Z Solid Chogokin metal figure, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's about $450.
Oh, this one's $150 on Amazon.
Yeah, there's a lot of Mazingers, or for the American people, Transor Z.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this one. I mean, I would buy that.
Yeah, you know that email.
Don't buy it right now.
You know, I hope.
Oh, better not.
I'm just saying, I hope it does well for the company, but if it does happen to go clearance, that could be something later on down the road. Somebody
buy this for me.
has Ender gotten his yet?
Did he actually do it? I knew he wants
it. I don't know.
We'll ask him. I'll ask him next week.
Well, you know, Brian, I tried to. I was
going
to make
a joke.
I mean,
you know he's going to get one eventually.
I mean, yeah.
He's going to be missing a kidney, but...
I don't want to assume, but you know, Ender's wife is a lawyer. I'm pretty sure he can afford it if he wants it.
Like he'll get it, and it'll just like become part of the support structure for his Optimus Prime shell.
Yeah,
like, it'll just be there.
It'll be like the Atlas.
Yeah,
of his Optimus collection. Don't shrug.
Optimus shrugs. Okay, so God, I don't want to talk about Atlas Shrugged. So
nobody wants to talk about Atlas Shrugged.
I've read it twice. So Angry Birds Transformer soundtrack by Vince DiCola.
That's downloading now.
That's a thing. It's on Spotify. If you have Spotify, I wouldn't pay for it.
But yay, Vince! I'm glad
he's doing work.
He's still out there.
So Steve.
I know he does a lot of production stuff. You know, as far as behind. You know, as far as for other artists and stuff. But it's nice to see him getting some of his own stuff out there, too.
Absolutely. It's good that people remember him.
He works. It's just not, like, high-caliber stuff. Like, I remember, ironically, 10 years ago at the hotel we're going to be at in a week, he was at that OTFCC, and I was talking with him. He was, like, he was doing a direct-to-cable movie and stuff like that. Like, not stuff they're, like, composed by. It's just, like, zips by in a little stamp size window on your screen where they're showing the next show, you know.
I wonder how expensive it would be to I bought a video camera. I bought a video camera from next week's right here. It cost $200. I wonder if I can make a movie, how much it would cost to get Vince to actually do the soundtrack. Like, no joke. I mean, like, it could be like
probably more than your camera.
No, wait, I'm sure it would be. It might be like Clerks, you know, a movie that costs like $5,000 to make, but has like a $100,000 soundtrack.
Well, you could pull the Blair Witch Project and then return the camera back to Circuit City because they totally did that to keep their movie under budget.
It's kind of funny. This camera is like, it was $200, but it takes really good video. It's not like the professional camera that we had on my old job, but for $200, I'm very pleased with it. So,
well, it's gotten to the point now where a lot of cameras are using the same lenses for the cheaper models that they do with the higher models. So sometimes you're getting the same guts without the sticker posted.
It might not have the same lens. It's got a pretty decent CMOS sensor, though.
Yeah, it's got some of those higher grade parts. It's like it actually costs more to use the cheaper parts in some instances
to make more of the cheaper stuff. Yeah,
they just like just don't tell anyone. Okay,
so, well, what is that camera, Brian?
It's a Samsung. It was on sale at it was on sale for like $170 at Best
Not
Buy.
Not bad.
Yeah,
nice.
Pretty happy with that. So let's see here. What else do we have going on? Okay, third party news. I think I've talked about this one before, but then again, I think I haven't. So how many third-party not blasters are we up to now?
Three or four?
Yeah. Not quite as many as we have Dinobots.
So this KTC,
oh, yeah, three or four.
This KTC one is new, then.
I think this is the first Masterpiece-sized one we've seen.
Yeah, because the other one, I believe, by DX9 was a bit smaller, and it would not use standard Masterpiece cassettes.
How many blasters? How many official blasters do we have versus unofficial ones at this point?
Okay, so we got the Fall Cybertron one, the Universe one, which was Cybertron Soundwave mold, and the device
Vinyl
label
Tech.
One, and Action Master and original.
Vinyl Tech. So
Cybertron? Did you mention Cybertron?
Yeah,
the Universe.
Well, Cybertron was the Universe one. So
That's right.
So that's what, six?
Yeah, six. How many unofficials do we have?
Was there a World's Smallest Blaster, or was that one of the...
It was unofficial.
I have to say, though, this does look... I've seen a review on this by somebody, and it was an early test shot, but it's got a very unique transformation.
So
and
if it's
it
an early test shot, it's not a review. It's a preview.
Well, it's a preview, I guess.
Just get that out there.
That's true.
Oh, no, that's true. If anybody says they have
a review of an early test shot, that's not a review. It's a preview.
That's a preview.
So,
a very good point.
I don't know that I would buy a KFC or KTC cassette again, but other than afraid it's going to cut me and break, I'm still pretty halfway satisfied with...
So apart from that you think it's going to break and injure you, you're pretty almost satisfied with that.
Yeah. I mean,
another glowing recommendation from Brian Kilby.
So, how much was Citizen Stecker there?
Too much.
Too much?
Yeah.
Because I'm almost tempted on getting him. I just don't like that face. And if it's too much...
He was 155.
I don't like the face enough for 155.
He comes with two faces.
Oh, okay. Is one pretty?
No.
You can get the SXX add-on, which gives you a lot more faces.
And how much does that cost?
$20.
You know,
I
bought...
I shouldn't have to buy a third-party not face for my third-party not Transformer.
Have to, technically.
You know, real talk...
You do if you don't like the face it comes with.
The Ultra Magnus I got for $12 at Walmart 2 years ago, I think will do for now.
Yeah.
What Ultra Magnus was that?
The
Fall Cybertron?
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, it's like I said, I think a lot of companies... Work through these third-party companies work to find their niche on what they do best, and I think KFC or whatever they're now calling themselves, which I'm sorry I can't remember, but I believe the bigger sizes is where their forte is going to be, because I've seen a lot better reviews on their Die Stack, their Citizen Stack, and their other projects. So
okay, so let's talk about some third-party stuff here for a minute, because Don's bringing up an interesting point to me. I don't think like big stuff like Masterpiece scale and Kronos overblown scale is really where it's going, but you've seen that
don't
like a lot of stuff is skewing.
Look at that Overlord thing that never came out. I mean,
That was BTS toys for the record. See a lot of stuff now is skewing toward like Voyager size, and I think that's where they're really finding their balance point, because they can get like there's a scaling of the economy of stuff where if they make little stuff, it's still going to cost a lot, even though it's just a little tiny, and they can make it a little bit bigger and not too much more expensive, and it seems like more of a value.
Yeah.
So, we're getting Dinobots. Most of the combiners are moving into the Voyager price, or the Voyager Voyager scale, Voyager size level. And I think that's where stuff's going to go. The Fans Project Headmasters, nobody's got the latest one there already. Mine's coming tomorrow.
That looks nice.
You know, those are like Beast Wars mega size, and Sigma is actually a little bigger than that overall.
Oh, so I'm playing Angry Birds Transformers, and the loading screen just told me it's pouring water on the scraplets.
No, wait, that's out. I didn't even realize that was out.
Yeah, I just downloaded it.
Only on iOS. I think it's later still for Android.
I don't have an Apple device.
Not to me to interrupt, I just thought that was worthy of bringing up.
Yeah.
I really think Masterpiece is going to be beyond where most of these companies are going to be able to perform strongly. But, like, yeah, they're definitely falling into a larger scale than where a lot of third-party stuff started. So, I mean, that's actually a really good point.
The first third-party item I bought was that sidearm, not Firebolt figure. Yeah, that was the first third-party item.
How did you keep doing that?
I know, isn't it great? And I just want to point out, Master Shooter, I think, does a way better job.
Yes. I think my first third-party was a Unicron Brothers accessory set.
Oh, that's going way back, though.
Yeah, that's before it was third-party. That's just unofficial.
That was just when it was, you know, yeah.
Yeah, the terminology was different. That Big Lots Optimus Primal.
Well, I mean, I had crap like that. I had a pretty decent Star Saber knockoff.
So the game starts off with that animation that was around the internet.
The old 84.
This game is wonderful. This is my jam now. I haven't even started playing. I'm just watching it do stuff.
So GB Blackrock asked, how do you guys think the recently announced Super Fan Art Shapeways Hasbro offering will affect third parties? I don't think it'll have much of an impact, but I would love it to crush them.
It just gives legitimacy to the accessories. That's really it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's where it's really going to hit strong, because, like, Shapeways is not good for complete figures. Like, little stuff like Trent's non-IP infringing Battle Beast style figures that I can't actually remember the proper name of offhand.
They're so nice. I wanted to have a discussion about Shapeways, but there's so few people that I know that have actually bought any Shapeways items. So we never did it, but I bought the prototype for that, and it was so flippin' nice.
Until you broke it.
I bought the sandstone version. I should have got the plastic version. I didn't realize I wanted it in full color, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Right. Anyway, though, like, Shapeways is not going to be good for, like, full figures. Like, even, you know, Legends or Deluxe size, it's not going to work for that just because of how much it costs to print something like that. But, yeah, accessory parts, like, quick little add-ons, great for that.
Yeah, you know, people like, you know, Dr. Wu, and I'm just bringing him up because probably if anyone thinks accessories, that's probably one of the first people they go to. Like, he's doing a kit for Wheeljack's ears, and you've got gun kits and things like that. But he can do economies of scale and get more product out there probably than what you quicker than what you can do it yourself on the Shapeways, I'd probably think. You know, I mean people like him might have, you know, some hiccups here and there in their, you know, their budget. You know, like, he's like, you know, if something gets popular on Shapeways with this new program, they might have to rearrange their thing and do that kit later or something. But I think Brian's right. I don't think it's going to hurt a lot of people, at least initially.
And the thing is, you know, most of this third-party stuff doesn't move that many units. Like the Sigma L, I mean, that may sell, I'm guessing now, but if that sells 2,000 units, I would be very surprised.
Like, you know, I mean, we're never going to know exactly how many they produce, but the Fans Project stuff basically always, like, sells out from all the retailers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sells the quantity that they plan for it to sell, so they get back what they need to get back out of it.
Some of the iGear stuff that's not bad, like the GoBot Mini Warriors, they go on clearance at a limited edition run of 500. So,
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's all anecdotal.
Impossible Toys had a whole run of the Tetra Jets that I think you can still buy some of for $20 a piece.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a large number of people that are buying these. Maybe it's because the market's so saturated, or it could just be that there's not a big demand for it.
Well, we got to remember, a big market for us is what? A couple of hundred people? You know, this is a niche within a niche within a niche. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, how many of these units are they making, period?
That's my question.
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's a lot.
So if they're not selling out, it's really hurting them. But it's like, if they sell out, it's like, dude, 200 people bought it. I was playing a game and zoned out.
I always thought the runs would be more like, if you're talking about like Sigma L, I would think it would be like a run of like 10,000.
I seriously doubt
that. I think that would be like the very high end, I think. Like, my point was going to be that, like, for something that has a proven track record with the manufacturer and other figures in the series before it, the production run will probably go into the low to mid thousands. Yeah. You know, 2,000 to 5,000 units for something that the makers are reasonably sure is going to sell strongly. And, like, the Function X stuff sells strongly. That's been proven with the first three figures that have all sold out within a few weeks.
I'm thinking 10,000 to 30,000 is probably what, like, an adult collector would buy, like an official Transformer.
Well,
there are a lot more of those than there are third parties.
Well, putting into perspective, BotCon exclusives, I don't think they even make more than 1,000 of each one.
I was curious, that's probably true.
But it's weird because every convention I go to, there's some guy selling one of those sets. So,
well, Don, how much would you think they make at most? 2,000?
Well, actually, I think it's going to be a little bit more than that, because when they started doing the troop builder sets a couple of years ago, and they were doing three per pack, the price dropped on those, on that basic style of set, a little bit. Well, a drop is not a good word. It didn't go up that much. Going from a two-figure set to a three-figure set. Because Brian Savage did say, with them doing a three-figure set, like your auto troopers or your Sharktacons, they were getting the economies of production from the factories.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have 500 sets for BotCon, not counting the Icon packages and stuff kept back for missing parts and pieces, you're looking at least 1,500 to 2,000 on that one set of three.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay, so awesome. Look at this. Did you guys check the chat for what GB BlackRock posted?
Yeah, he keeps up with it. That's right.
Yeah, so an actual count of these items that were produced, and it's a lot lower than...
Yeah, it's... the prices reflect what the production... I'm putting away Angry Birds for a moment.
Put it in context. We have more listeners than buy this stuff.
That game is awesome.
Does. That's why.
Okay, let's put it in perspective. When they put, what does your average BotCon figure cost by itself? Let's round about. Those packs.
Depends which one. $100.
Yeah. Well, that pack. Say the Troop Builder pack's what? $100 now.
Yeah.
And that's three molds repainted.
Yeah. This year it was $129.
Okay.
But
because pack.
Yeah,
it was three separate molds, though.
Yeah, it wasn't the same mold gang molded.
Okay, so when they did the Seeker 3-pack last year, how much was that?
Yeah, let's pick one of the same.
About $100.
$100.
Okay, $100. Okay, 2,000 units. They probably cost half that in production costs. We're not adding shipping. Their profit margin is probably really slim. Because I think their profit mainly comes from the convention itself and the table costs from the dealers. Because the dealers, when they buy their tables, that pays for what their costs were for the space. And all the registrants are pure profit. So, and the toys really are just a come-to-our-freaking-show incentive. So we're talking, that's using a mold that's already been used, so you have to pay for the tooling. How much is your average third-party figure run?
$100.
$100. One. So you're tripling the cost there for the original tooling, the production, the shipping, and the packaging. A lot of times the packaging costs more than the actual tooling. A lot of people don't know that. Or they don't know that Optimus was a Diaclone. inside jokes. But when it comes to packaging costs, smaller runs cost more. the pulp, the production. Paper is not cheap any which way you cut it. And when you talk about glossy stocks, and these boxes are pretty ornate, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're getting this figure for $100 and they only made, what are we saying, 500 of each? Maybe 1,000?
Yeah.
Possibly.
What I'm trying to say is I don't have the exact percentage, but about 50% of it says you're getting played like a fool.
Well, now, one thing we might want to consider is if these factories, are they looking at, if they're looking at just, let's say, I'm going to take Kronos as an example because he's sitting right here. Let's say they're going to do Kronos, okay, and it's on the production line.
So they're going to make but a huge mistake?
But if they're not, if they're looking at as what the company has orders in total and not as individual items, I know there's different toolings and all that. I'm just saying if the company that makes Kronos had four figures lined up.
Nope, they don't. They're not making figures anymore because they did a horrible job on that.
Diecast, I know that. I am using it as an example.
I know, but well, you're using an example that the figure makes us mad, so you get you
okay,
get the roll.
All right, okay. Jeeper Creeper. Everybody loves Jeeper Creeper, okay? Everybody loves Jeeper Creeper. He's awesome. Let's say they're making four Jeeper Creepers, or at least four variants of him, but with each one with different tooling. If they look at it from a standpoint of what the company is ordering for production in total, not just by individual run, there may be some discounts of economy of scale there.
Well, let's also these factories are contracted work. Hold up your Jeeper Creeper there, Don. Now, I'm not saying this because he's small. Jeeper Creeper is a basic toy. See, he's got two colors, black and green. So that these gang molded, so that's two toolings. That's why they gang mold the colors so they can cut back on those tooling costs. Those steel tools are very freaking expensive, and they wear out every so many pressings. So I would rate your Jeeper Creeper at a size was two plates, okay? That's two toolings. So you're talking about the assembly, those pins, the sticker, because the stickers came on them out the pack, didn't they, or did we have to put those on?
No, everything was already applied on him.
Okay, so that's one more worker we're paying for, or a couple of shifts. Factories tend to go by prorated amount, or like each project a different amount. So if they're, what I'm trying to say is, if they're only making 500, 1,000 units, you put in factory costs, you put in fuel costs. A lot of people don't realize when, I moved a mic to do that. The oil costs, it isn't just the manufacturing of the plastic, it's the transport. Fuel costs weigh into the weight of the product. So when they transfer, the cost that they're putting in a transfer, it's per case, per load. Brian's about to do something on the megaphone.
I pulled my microphone away to do this. I just wanted to say that. I've been trying to look for something clever to say. I'm kind of jumpy. Sorry.
It's okay. I actually just logistic myself into a corner. Like, what was I talking about?
I'm just actually multitasking
per
right
per
now.
Load.
So we're working in the cost. Well, how much did Kronos cost?
Too much.
$400?
No, really. How much did he cost?
He was $164.99 at Big Bad Toy Store.
$169. How big is he?
He's about 13 inches.
13 inches. Okay. How hollow did he feel?
Very hollow.
Oh, God.
Very hollow?
Isn't it partly die-cast, though?
That's ridiculous.
Part well, die-cast is a different set of tooling altogether.
I think he's partly styrene, too.
Yeah. Oh, they're all styrene.
I heard someone talking about this the other day. Isn't it also partly rubber band?
Probably, yes.
Isn't that a third-party add-on?
And a little bit of gum?
That was a Fun Pub add-on, dude.
Okay. So, and was that, did he have an elaborate packaging, or what was
yes.
just like...
He had nice glossy? Packaging had, that he, they didn't had, take care of, and most of them came cracked.
Did he have an insert?
He was in a bubble window. He was in a window box, in a window box.
Okay. He had an instruction manual.
How many did the guy... Well, he didn't use a factory, did he? Attack. I mean, that guy went through each one, didn't he?
No, he had a factory.
He He had a factory? Okay. Yeah. So how many did he make?
1,000, I believe, was the...
1,000.
Man, what was his profit margin? Because when you put all those costs in at 160, he probably made $10 off of each unit. If.
And I don't even think they sold them all either.
Yeah. And I'm saying if before taxes, before grosses. Oh,
yeah, I mean, when we're
farts,
talking about the profit margin Rhinox for the menu, when we're talking about profit margin for the manufacturer, we're talking about, you know, what they're selling it to the retailers for, because after that point, it's the retailer's problem to...
Well, there's where your cost really comes in. They sold it to the retailer, and he probably made, it's fair to say, 10, 15 a piece.
Does it matter? Does it matter that the manufacturer is not the person that actually selling the toy, because they have to buy the materials and everything from the manufacturer?
Well, here's the part. Time and time again, these leaks from these things said the price comes from the retailer. What the retailer does, this isn't Walmart, so they're probably doubling what they paid is what they're charging to cover all their costs and to still make a profit. Because I think Joel has a nice car.
I hope
he has a multi-million dollar online business. You know, where was I again? I talked myself.
That's okay, Rob.
Turn off your phone.
That's okay, Rob. That's okay.
Rob, do you need some of that black blood of the earth?
I do. I was talking like warehouse and stuff.
Okay. So let's see here. Let's go ahead and what were we doing? I don't even know.
I was playing Angry Birds.
Third party Mirage.
Last item was the not Mirage recolor of GoBot Crasher.
Does anyone know that company?
DX9 is mostly known at this point for doing other small masterpiece style figures.
Well, it's probably the same artists and the same people, and they just rebrand themselves.
What else have they done?
They did. Didn't they do Continuously Variable, the Gears?
Probably. I don't know. They just all run together.
Anyway, DX9 has kind of a short history behind them, so...
Okay, that Gears one is the one that went on clearance, like, almost immediately.
I think Variable was SXS.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, different X.
Yeah.
DX9 might have had did they have the Blur that's only existed in concept art so far, or was that also SXS?
They're doing a small Legends class Blur and Ironhide 2-pack that's not out yet.
They're also doing
that Genrai add-on kit for Evasion Mode Prime to turn him into basically a movie-verse version of Genrai.
Yeah, that's what BBTS has.
Yeah.
Okay, so since I'm like blending two companies together in my head, has DX9 actually released a figure yet?
It doesn't look that way.
I believe that all they've done is kits to this point.
But I love Mirage so much. I want a Masterpiece Mirage more than most things. Again, I would probably break it. But
I think we'll get a Masterpiece Mirage, though. I don't think that's
but
one
how,
that's...
How long? Yeah,
eventually.
Eventually, we're going to get a Masterpiece Mirage. It might be 2016, but we'll get a Masterpiece Mirage.
Yeah.
That's not crazy talk. That's a year.
This would be a small Masterpiece Mirage, too, because I think it's about a 6-inch figure.
Okay.
16 centimeters, whatever that is, to inches.
A little over 6 inches, okay. Like 6.5 inches.
I'm going to call it at some point. So Takara is going to start reusing engineering in the masterpieces, because like they could probably steal the engineering from Classics Mirage, throw in some nicer stuff.
They own it, so it's not stealing.
Well, you get what I'm saying. They're borrowing. They're reusing engineering. It's not like the first time they did it. G2 Smokescreen, Energon Starscream, stuff like that.
So Skullface is pointing out that DX9 is the designer for Unique Toys, and they made Salmor. So I will admit, Salmor is pretty awesome. So if they made Salmor, I'm game.
Don't a lot of these designers work contract for different companies?
Probably.
Yeah,
Skullface would know better than I would.
That's what I've heard.
Oh, and also, Brian, I did not know this, and this same thing for you, Diecast. Under the DX9 banner at BBTS, they have Splinter listed, which is the Salmor variant, which I did not know.
The green one?
No.
Turtles, I have become a car.
Rengar?
Rengar, yeah, the Rengar version. And it says by Unique Toys, but it's listed under the DX9 category.
Salmor is probably my favorite third-party Transformer toy that I've ever had. I love it.
I made another funny.
God. That's nice. Okay, but
you are not Mako.
So assuming it's the same designer, because
and break it
and break it because it's Mirage, same designer, great toy, really really nice toy.
It looks like it's very classic ish Mirage in the legs, but the torso looks a little different. So I'm looks like there's some different engineering going on in the torso.
Even the arms to me look a lot like that classics transformation.
Yeah, I thought so too. The torso is a little bit stockier and not quite as streamlined as the classics figure, but otherwise, in terms of engineering, it doesn't look that different.
Yeah, because where the classics one diverged was keeping most of the race car, like the nose and the front wheels sticking off the back. They didn't incorporate into the front of the torso like the original had.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, you just change that one part and you come to a more normal Mirage appearance, but you still keep most of what made the Classics one interesting.
Okay, just pre-ordered it. There you go, done.
I put away Transformers Angry Birds to participate in the show. I'm just going to say this game is really fun.
An hour into the show. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, so let's go ahead and take a break. It's going to be a long one. We will be back with Q&A with Rob Springer. Here in about an hour.
So, 45 minutes.
Yeah, quite a while.
Oh, no. Okay.
About an hour. So, long show. We'll see you here in just a few minutes.
We're going to use the bathroom.
A few dozen minutes, so.
Radio Free Cybertron has teamed up with Kokomo Toys and Collectibles in Kokomo, Indiana. If you're in the Kokomo area, visit our store for a huge selection of new and classic toys. Visit online at www.kokomotoys.com for our address and store hours. While you're there, check out our listing of pre-order items, as well as visit our eBay store. Visit us at www.kokomotoys.com. That's KOKOMOTOYS.com. We're also on Facebook.
We are here with Jim Sorensen and Bill Forster, the authors of many a fine Transformers tome, but most recently the Transformers Legacy book, which I have been lusting over for quite a while. It's out. Amazon hasn't gotten my copy to me yet, but XV did the TFormers.com review, so he is quite familiar with the book. So, guys, how's it going?
It's going really well.
It's been about 8 months since we last spoke with it was Jim in respect to the book. So in the interim, quite a few things have happened. But I know some people haven't heard about this before. So what led you guys to decide to put a book together like this?
We first got together and started working on the arcs. It was just immediately, what we should do is we should do the box art. So when we were working on the arc, before it came out, we would talk to people and what have you and show them what we were doing. And everybody would say, like, oh, that's really interesting. However, what I really want to see is all the airbrushed artwork from the box art. And just over the years, people would come up to us and say, you guys should do this. And it's always been in the back of our minds, and it just wasn't until now that we could actually pull it off.
Yeah, one of the big challenges with this book was just getting our hands on the artwork, because I think when people were suggesting to us, oh, you guys should do this, the thought process was probably one of two things. Either one, Hasbro probably has all this art, which is a logical assumption, but it's not one that happened to be true. Or, I've seen most of this art on the internet in varying degrees, so it shouldn't be too hard to pull together, which could be true if we were okay with having the artwork be, the size of a postage stamp, but the way we wanted to do it, with the pieces being either a full page or a reasonable percentage of the page, we really needed to go back to the primary source and immediate secondary source material, the original paintings or first generation copies like photo negatives.
What took so long for us to get all these things together, too, is we didn't want to have to sit down and have to recreate the legs or an arm that got cut off in the package after you get in front of the package, or where there's letters or numbers over the image itself. We wanted to be able to just do it as easily as possible, because we knew it was going to be a lot of images, and we didn't want to have this big burden of reconstructing 800 images.
Keep in mind that when the original artists were creating these pieces, they had 2 to 4 weeks per image to create them. So if we wanted to have Bill redraw a leg, that's a week's worth of work. And there's 700-800 images in the book that we wanted to be able to cover. So we, you know, frankly, we didn't have the budget to spend, you know, 700 or 800 weeks on the book.
So you've published a lot of books. Would you say this is one of the hardest to compile in the end?
Oh, absolutely. Jim did the compiling.
I did the gathering of the source material, but I'd say in virtually any axis that you might want to measure, this was the hardest book that we've done. It was the hardest to track down the material, the hardest to restore the material. So the most difficult in terms of making sure that the ownership of the material was properly sourced, so we could legally use the material. Which not something we had to do, but something Hasbro had to do. It was a tough one.
Now you reached out to the fandom to help source the art. First, what kind of response did you get from the fandom, and how much of the art in the book actually did come to you through the help of fans?
Depending on how you just because of the way you phrased that question, I'd say virtually 100% came to us with the help of fans. But that's a little bit me being playing semantic games, because about 40% of the art came to us from Takara via their design firm, and the person who was really taking the lead there was Andrew Hall, who goes by Hydra sometimes, and he's definitely a fan. And then for Hasbro, they had I'd say roughly about 10% of the material of the book came directly from Hasbro archives, and there I was working with Rick Alvarez, who again definitely counts as a fan.
Right.
But to get to the substance of your question, I'd say roughly half of it came from non-official sources.
Okay.
So that makes sense. When you put it in that respect. So out of everything that's in the book, what are you most proud of?
The fact that it's done.
I can respect that.
I think for me, I'm proud that it's the first time we've had a hardcover, and I just really feel like because it took so long for us to put we had the idea so early on in our Transformers career that it took so long to put together, it just feels like a larger accomplishment than anything else we've done.
It's hard for me to point to any one piece and say I'm proudest of this. The way my mind tends to work is I get very focused on what I don't have. So, you know, whatever I would probably be proudest of is sort of whatever the last piece I found was, because it's like, oh, I didn't think I was going to get that one in the book, and we did. I think the very last piece of art that we got into the book was one of the three UK puzzle pieces, and that came in really, really late, like sort of after we'd submitted our first draft to IDW, and we kind of like in frustration threw up our hands and said, we're done with the book. And then things had gotten cut and we needed a little bit more space. And I said, well, I do happen to have this one last piece if we can shove it in. Not that I necessarily am proudest of that now, but since that happened to be the last one. And I think what I'm proudest about is just how comprehensive we managed to get with it, because that was never the goal. We never thought we could accomplish that, because we knew, you know, even looking at what Takara had in their archive, they had a lot, but we knew they had huge gaps. So we never pitched it to IDW, and we never really allowed ourselves to believe that we'd be able to get 100% or close to 100% of the material that was in scope. So the fact that we almost did, though, I think that the only thing we're missing from G1 US is a couple of Action Masters and then Jetfire for legal reasons. We're really, really proud of that.
We always kind of thought that we'd just have like a representation of every year. But I think another thing where I think both me and Jim are very proud of is the last two chapters of the book are unused materials as well as oddities. And I think it just really helps pepper some spice onto the book and really add an element of the book that really gives some depth to it and gives fans that may have seen every single thing before something new to see.
Yeah, I think that Certainly for anybody, even if you're a really big fan of the box, or even if you, you know, if Botch the Crab is your homepage, you know, you'll have material in here that you've never seen before because it hasn't been published before, to our knowledge. I mean, of course, in 5 years or so, this stuff, you know, it'll be all over the web. But for right now, it's like, you know, this is what will introduce it to the world.
But I was really impressed with the things in Unused and Oddities. There was stuff in there I'd never seen before. And I was wondering, based on that, were there things that you were offered contributions of that you guys had never seen before?
For me, yes. For me, I couldn't list them off right now. But Jim is much more of a as much of a fan as I am. Jim puts me to shame as being a much hardcore fan. So he would send me a lot of things that I would just go, "What is this?" And he'd have to explain it to me, or, "Where did this come from?" So for me, yeah, it was very exciting because I'd wake up in the morning and see what he sent me, and it would be these unusual things that I'd never seen before.
Yeah, I absolutely encountered material that I had no idea existed. And sometimes I didn't even necessarily recognize it as such when I was first looking at it, and I had to process it. A good example of that is the U.S., release of Multiforce half of Multiforce that never happened. For all I know, there's artwork for the other three guys too, and maybe even the combined form. But I came across those three pieces, and actually the first, and they were I think those were photo negatives. So of course the image, the color was reversed. So I was getting used to looking at things that were a little bit off anyway. And I was looking at those, and at first I think I dismissed them. I looked at them and I said, "Oh yeah, Mach, I have him." And I was going through it, and I think it wasn't until later that I said, It hit my subconscious. Said, "Wait a minute! No! I don't. I have Mach Tackle. I don't have Mach, do I?" Because I didn't even know that. So I went back and I looked, and so that was one of those cases. I think the full on box art for Full Barrel and Overflow, the MicroMaster Combiner Transport. That was pretty neat because, of course, we've. I don't want to say everybody has, because probably not everybody has, but on the back of the package for Full Barrel and Overflow, the front they have the really nice artwork of the truck, and on the back they have their heads in little circles, which is what they did for all of those guys. But usually they just pulled out the heads from the from the image of the vehicle, which is not what they did in that case. So I assume that they had intended to feature both of those characters, you know, with a nice full splash, and then cut it and just use the heads. But that was one that Rick Alvarez at Hasbro had dredged up, and he's like, "I don't think that anybody's used these before." And I'm like, "Oh, cool." And I honestly wasn't quite as knowledgeable about MicroMasters going into it, so you know, I sort of took him at his word, and he was right. But it that was another one where it didn't immediately hit me, but then when I started doing my homework, I'm like, "Oh no, this is actually really kind of a neat piece." Now that was one of the ones I teased at Auto Assembly. I showed off the heads with the bodies blackened in, and like, you know, coming in June 2014, which is a little optimistic, but only a few months off, actually, as it turns out.
So I know there's quite a few things that you guys received that you couldn't use. So was there anything that you just wanted to use but couldn't because it was incomplete or damaged or anything like that? Anything else like that?
Well, the thorn on my side was we had to remove Jetfire for legal reasons, and that just bothered me for a matter of completion. But I don't think I can think of anything else. We had some Action Masters come our way that were just of too poor quality. We can post those.
Yeah, a lot of fans really wanted to help and had sent box scans, but as it turns out, we just In almost no cases were box scans something where the quality was there. We thought we might be able to get away with it with someone like Trypticon, the U.S. version of Trypticon, because you know it's such a large box that even you know maybe if you shrunk it by half, we'd be able to do it. But then his whole tail was cut off.
Yeah.
So that wasn't. And we weren't. He was one of those weird cases where we kind of convinced ourselves, yeah, we can probably live with this because we have the Japanese version of him in the book, and then we had this sort of funky unused version, like an early draft of him in the book. So, and I had a full version of Trypticon that we could use, smaller than sort of Trypticon could be, but in the context of comparing him to the other Trypticons, we kind of thought, okay, we could get away with it. But The only thing I can think of where Bill had to do a little restoration was one of the Action Masters that came to us from Hasbro had some water damage on it, just a little bit. But I think he had to do that. But he actually got into the book, so that's not exactly what you're asking.
So Jetfire you couldn't use for legal reasons. Did you expect that going in, or did you that just land in your lap in the course of doing the work?
It just landed on our lap.
Yeah, because you know Hasbro's used Jetfire image in other media. Bill found a deck of cards that was published pretty recently where they'd used them. But I think it's hard for us to comment knowledgeably about what exactly is going through Hasbro Legal's mind. But you know, it's their job to keep
protect their brand. And we all know about Harmony Gold. So, question. Sorry, I just had to say it. So, I'm surprised, though, if with Jetfire that there wasn't something else that might have been used, like any other Bandai, you know, originated toy or something like that. But pretty interesting about that. Kind of sad, but I'll live with it.
Yeah. Well, so Bandai probably wasn't the issue then.
No. Gotcha. Let's see here. So what's next for you guys? I know there's a complete version of the AllSpark Almanac coming out. Yeah. Is there any new material?
There's the status of the AllSpark Almanac, complete AllSpark Almanac hasn't been 100% decided. I was pushing and am, for as much as we can, but that's mostly going to be, the fan club material, partially because, you know, there hasn't been more animated except for what the fan club has produced.
Yeah.
So, if there had been a season 4, then I'd be pushing to, have 40 new pages and cover all the season 4 episodes and characters, but there hasn't. So, but that may or may not happen. That's, our editors are on board, but, there could be other factors involved. So hopefully, fingers crossed that we'll be able to do the version that has sort of everything that's been branded AllSpark Almanac.
Well, what we do know definitively about that is what the cover looks like. And the cover's fantastic.
Ooh, pretty cool. Can you tell us what's on the cover at the very least?
Awesome artwork.
So
good answer.
So, did you find out anything else? Go ahead.
A lot of characters.
Sweet. Do you plan on doing anything else in the vein of Legacy or maybe another G.I. Joe field manual or anything like that?
We always have a handful of ideas going. Nothing is greenlit as of now, but which means we're not in a liberty to talk about anything. But yes, we always have at least 3 or 4 ideas burning somewhere.
Yeah, something's going on. Legacy has just come out, so we don't know what the sales figures look like. But if that does well, that could open the door for other packaging art, maybe more Transformers packaging art for later, Beast Wars and beyond, maybe G.I. Joe packaging art or, who knows. So there's that. We always have fun with the black and white animation model books, and there's still plenty of that hasn't yet seen the light of day. There's all the Japanese Beast Wars and car robots / the first robots in disguise, which ironically now we probably would be back to sort of calling it car robots because it might be simpler, especially if we did it in the context of Beast Wars 2, Beast Wars Neo, and of course I did the Art of Prime last year, so now they're doing robots in disguise, so that might be a potential book, and Hasbro has lots of not Hasbro. IDW has lots of other licenses of books that we'd be interested in. So, we always sort of pitch 5 or 6 a year, and they usually buy 1 or 2. So it's not a bad position to be in, really.
And if you want to, before the interview, I did suggest the Transformers fan tattoos, the art of the fan tattoo. You can use that. I will, for perpetuity, whenever you want to do it. You don't have to – any kickbacks or anything. It's yours.
No, thank you. As a tattoo fan, I really like that idea. I think that's a lot of fun.
My friend Bob, he has a great Decepticon tattoo. It's mostly the right shape. I mean, I can send you photos.
Mostly the right shape.
It's mostly the right shape.
I think that's a good quote for the back of the book. It's mostly
the Transformers right fan tattoos. It's mostly the right shape.
So, XV, any other parting thoughts, questions that you are dying to know the answer to?
Well, I don't have any more questions, but I do have one thought. This is a great book, you guys. You really, like, hit this out of the park. I love this. Everybody needs to pick up a copy of this. I mean, like you said earlier, there is something new in here for everyone to see. I mean, you did a really great job on this. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. We appreciate the feedback, and we definitely think that everybody, man, woman, child, doesn't matter if you're a Transformers fan or not, I think everybody should have one of these. So now you know what's on everybody's Christmas list.
Better be.
Yeah.
Guys, anything else? Anything you want to tell the fans before we part ways?
Thanks for helping us put together this book. I mean, it was a dream of ours, and we appreciate everybody who contributed to it. And we hope everybody loves it. And thanks for buying it.
Yeah, absolutely. We could not have done it without the help of the fans. And hey, if you find this book or you find this interview and you have some original artwork or some photo negatives or transparencies or something that didn't make it in, you know, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Or if you have animation models, you know, we crowdsource, you know, quite a lot of what we do. So, you know, we're always looking for more material. If you want to contribute, we always try to make sure that everybody who had a hand in making the books as special as they are, get their acknowledgments. So definitely would love to hear from you. Or if you just want to let us know what you liked, what you didn't like about the books.
And Brian, if you have any other ideas for books, send them our way too.
I absolutely will, believe me. Well, Bill, Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Years ago on the planet Earth, toys existed. Similar, yet quite unlike toys as we know them today, die-cast robots that could shift and turn into vehicles showed up on shelves. But these jets, cars, even tape players were more than just mere toys. They had names like Optimus, Megatron, Ironhide, and Starscream. Locked in a battle for the universe, they were split into two warring factions, Heroic Autobot and Evil Decepticon. Collectively, they were known as the Transformers, and our world would never be the same.
That's amazing, Don.
Beautiful, Don. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers 101, the new podcast from the Radio Free Cybertron Network, brought to you by RFC and TFU.info. I am your host, Anthony Brucali, from TFU.info, and joining us today is Brian Kilby from Radio Free Cybertron, Robo Rob Springer, from Radio Free Cybertron, and omniscient to all Transfandom, Headmaster Don. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Hello. Hey, Ant, how's it going?
It's going good. So I figured, you know, Brian and I were talking by email, kind of birthing this podcast, along with Rob, about kind of doing a look back on the last 30 years of Transformers, and kind of going year by year into what made that year special and why things from that year are important or not important, what's been missed over those years, and what we would like to see down the line, but also to kind of give new Transformers fans a way to kind of just do a little research and find out why people like what they like. So with that, I guess the first question is, I guess we've all been around since 84 or thereabouts.
Yeah. Sure thing. Absolutely. God, that was a long time ago.
Why do we feel old now?
My back.
Oh, my neck.
We feel old.
It wasn't that long ago.
In the fandom for like 18 years.
It doesn't feel...
I was 14 at the time.
It doesn't feel old because it grew up with us, you know. It's like, nah, it's like, I'm not old.
It's like seeing your best friend from middle school, if you stayed in touch, they really look the same to you, even though
they've
aged quite a bit.
Yeah, you see the, like, I think all of us can look back at an old BotCon picture and be like, yeah.
Time passed.
Whoa, baby faces. Hair.
All right. So with that, back to when we had, you know, more hair for all of us, probably. I guess the first question is, what makes 1984 so important? Why is that first year so near and dear to Transformers fans? So I guess I'll throw that out to Don to start.
I think because even though GoBots was on the air, I believe, by that point, this was a whole new level of immersion for the transforming robot. We hadn't seen this kind of detail, a plot, background. The animation quality was significantly better, again, give or take.
In 84 it was.
As far as versus the GoBots cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it just made such an impact because there was a lot of things similar, but nothing quite like it on the air. And it was something that was still fresh and new. Robots that turn into something else. Because we all grew up with robots, like, you know, Disney's The Black Hole or whatever the case might have been.
Lost in Space for
Lost
some of
in Space, exactly. So, but your refrigerator could now, in your imagination, be a robot in disguise. And I think that just really clicked with the consciousness of, like, this is a real thing that could happen. You know, my parents' car could be an Autobot in disguise. And for kids that age, it was just a whole new way to imagine playing. Plus, they were actually, again, they weren't fleshed out until later on in the series. But to some degree, even in Generation Season 1, we had a little bit more background, a little bit more characterization out of the gate than a lot of toy line cartoons that day.
And this was back, you know, after deregulation, after you could have a media and a toy property come together. And it really brought these toys alive in a way that nothing had really been done before. Like, my first Transformer was Mirage. And still to this day, I feel there's something special with that toy. I mean, certainly if my first toy had been Jazz or maybe Ironhide, I would still feel that way about it. But there's just something alive about Transformers in my mind from that year that no other year quite captured.
And Rob, do you have anything to add?
You know, you guys are talking, and it just kind of dawned on me. 84 wasn't just Transformers. It was like Ghostbusters and Gremlins and all these other, like, landmarks. I think that year just really had lightning in a bottle from January 1st. You know what I mean? Like, everything about it's been, like, you know, a
nostalgic powerhouses.
Yeah.
Reagan Bush.
I would.
Iran-Contra.
Well, Contra was a good game.
Contra was 4 years later, but yes.
But yeah, I think you guys get where I'm going at. It's like that year seemed to introduce so many stuff that just will not go away. So who knows? Maybe there's some sort of cosmic 1984 magic we're not aware of yet.
I think it's also our age. And there's probably something special about that group, that year, and then where it sits in our minds, because we were all, with the exception of Don, we were probably about in that 6 to 8 year old range, give or take.
Five.
Yeah.
Under five. And then all those things blowing up, becoming like part of the cultural consciousness, is a big thing. Brian, you mentioned something about deregulation and something I was thinking about on my ride home from work today when we were just prepping mentally for the show was, the breaks in the original cartoon, Transformers, you know, Transformers will be right back with the animation. Those are actually required by the FCC.
I didn't know
in
that.
Children's programming, yes. It's to make so kids know the difference between the end of the show and the start of the commercials.
Oh, wow. That makes sense. I knew, of course, about the PSAs, but I didn't know about the bumpers.
Yeah, it's thinking that there were still regulations in place at the time. Like, you couldn't see a Transformers commercial during the cartoon. Like, they weren't allowed to run ads during their own show. And part of that was to break that up also was the bumpers in and out of break.
Yeah. That's why you saw Transformer commercials in G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe commercials in Transformers.
I mean, it was a 22-minute commercial. I mean, did you really need any more than that?
Yes, buy toys.
3-minute infomercial.
Buy. Buy.
I think we could buy a Transformer. I'll be right back.
Right now? Order me a gear, so I need one.
There was a great episode of Dinosaurs where the baby was watching a show called Captain Action Figure. And he was like, we must do this. Kids, tell your parents to buy that. And the baby's like, I want that. Everyone say it with me. I want that.
And without going too deep into that hole, I mean, really, that was still fairly new at that point back in 84. Deregulation was, what, 82, something like that? So
it started right before He-Man. Yeah. He-Man was pretty much the first major cartoon that took advantage of the deregulation status.
Yeah.
They rushed that Joker through fast as they could, didn't they?
So I think back when we first joined the fandom, that was a pretty common bit of knowledge. But I think as things have been diluted a little bit with, you know, the ballooning of the internet, I think a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, that's really, Transformers really was a cartoon, and they really capitalized on that change in the law. But I digress.
Well, go ahead, John or Rob.
I'm John now. Well, I'm John, and I'd like to say, but people keep saying like the other shows didn't really have that, but you know, GoBots had characters, Mighty Orbots had characters, all that. I think the fact that the main characters were the robots and they weren't just some sort of vehicle for a show. I mean, GoBots were self-propelled, but you get what I'm saying? It was still that kid and that guy with a mustache the whole show, you know?
Yeah.
And the Orbots had Commander Rob.
That's right. And I led the charge.
And they were piloted robots in their combined form, so they weren't autonomous living robots from the planet Cybertron.
Well, I mean, Voltron, I mean, you know, you watch a show like Power Rangers or Pacific Rim or whatever, why does the big fight scene only come at the end? Well, money, that's why.
Money.
Yeah, Voltron was a cartoon, and the fight scene still came at the end. Why? Well, because we won't see what these people are up to.
Yeah, but you were saying.
Well, just going off of that, also talking about how things were different. Recently, there's an article that's kind of floating around Facebook about how last week was the final week of Saturday morning cartoons on major network TV and some of the smaller syndicated networks. And it just got me thinking back also to how we used to consume the cartoon, consume Transformers as a entertainment product, that it was on every day, that it was 5 days a week, usually at 4 o'clock, at least where I live. It was surrounded by, it was in a 2-hour block of cartoons that started from 3 and ended at 5.
Yep.
Usually followed by like 60s Batman or Little House on the Prairie, something kind of in between age ranges. And it was on, right, you know, and you had your option, your number of channels was limited probably to at most 7, and that's probably including your local PBS affiliate. And how different it was. Like, you got home and you came home and you did your homework while watching Transformers. It wasn't like, oh, we have to wait till it's on Cartoon Network. And even now it was appointment programming, which we don't have anymore. We have on demand, we have DVRs. It's a much different way of consuming things. It was much more special to come home almost to find it than it is now, where you can have it at any time.
Yeah, because I remember having a small 13-inch black and white TV in my room and having UHF antennas. And I would have to actually move the television around the room trying to get the signal in from a UHF source to watch it. And then it moved to what would be a local UHF station, but it was local to the point where I could get it almost like a broadcast station 5 days a week. And it was like the most awesome thing, because it was like Jim at 2, and Humanoids at 2:30, G.I. Joe at 3, Transformers at 3:30, whatever the case was. And I'd run home from school, and, you know, high school at the time, and I would do my homework, like you said, watching right there 5 days a week. I remember running home Monday morning, and then later on down the road, when Rebirth started, it was like, all right, a brand new season. What do you mean? That's it.
I was fortunate that when Transformers aired, my dad was still at work, because it was in the early afternoon, right after school, and I was able to watch this on our big 25-inch color TV. Still an antenna, but I could watch it on the color TV, and only after hours. you know, that I have to watch things like Sanford and Son on the black and white TV in my room. So
I remember the neighborhood we lived in at the time. The show started literally within a minute or two of me stepping off the school bus. And I had like a good maybe block, two block walk. And every day it was mad run straight out of the bus trying to get to my TV. And my brother's like, it's a rerun! As I ran past them to get to the TV.
Well, for season one, I mean, there are only 16 episodes. So how long were those episodes in rerun?
Oh, man.
Remember off the top of their head?
I'll be honest. Yeah. Because that we lived in a town called Statesboro. And at the time, the local cable was crazy. It was like channels from other states and stuff. And summer break, you could literally, because of time differences, watch the same block of cartoons all day. Just if you knew which channels to flip it to next. It was the craziest thing. Like, it was like, okay, it came on this one channel in the morning. Flip it over to the Bozo. He's showing it now. Flip it over somewhere else. Oh, G.I. Joe's on. I mean, it was the weirdest.
Yeah.
I missed local cable.
And what they would do is time wore on, as the show got older, they would bump it up a half hour every year. So 1 year would be at 4, the next year would be at 3:30, and they moved the newer shows behind it. And eventually they would cycle it out, but it would take 3-4 years before a show would cycle off.
They would show mine in succession. Like, they'd run out of new episodes. Well, here's an episode from the first year now.
Yeah, because I remember it was originally shown on locally 7:30 on Saturday mornings, and they ran through the entire first season. Then they reran it again. I think we went through 4 complete runs of until we actually remember. I remember one Saturday morning, just I wasn't even going to watch it because I knew it'd be a repeat, and it was Autobot Spike, which was the first episode that I saw of season two. And that, and so we went through at least 4 complete season ones before we even got anything new.
You know, I don't think it even bothered me that they were reruns, because I was so used to just reruns in general. Like, my father would watch Bewitched every evening, and it wasn't until I got older until I realized that was an old show I was watching, because it was just reruns all the time was, I guess, on TV.
Well, moving from that, what would you guys say makes this... Everyone seems to love the 84 cast. In fact, we've gotten... Every character now, this year, as of this year, has been given an updated version thanks to Gears coming out from the 84 cast. In fact, every Decepticon from 84 has been made into a masterpiece, and a good chunk of the Autobots have as well, or are about to. What makes this that particular cast so near and dear to people?
They're the first.
Yeah.
Is that
easy to keep track of, since there were so few of them, relatively speaking?
Yeah, I mean,
are they caricatures, are they characters or caricatures? Because like they're special in a way, but when you boil it down, you know, Optimus is Superman, and
they're ciphers.
You know,
or archetypes.
Various characters are just either archetypes or therefore there's one ability, like Trailbreaker.
Yeah, but there was enough characters that no matter which side you were on, someone appealed to you, and that was your affiliation character, because there was enough characters and they were fleshed out enough, at least that way, so you could say, hey, I like Sideswipe because he's cool, he's tricky, or I like Jazz because he always knows what's going on, or I like Trailbreaker because he does force fields, there was always one character that you could say that's my favorite. Because you had enough to choose from.
You know, also, and as much as I love movie and post-movie episodes more of the G1 show, that sold the concept more those first 2 years. Cause it's like, hey, they're on Earth. They're turning into Earth cars. They're sort of in disguise. This, that. I mean, someone actually, it was a friend of mine. I was watching, I think it was Rebirth, now that I think about it, with me on DVD. And he was like, why do they bother transforming if they're on their own planet? I'm like, yeah, what are they hiding from?
Yeah, season one, they really kept better.
Sold
that,
it, yeah.
Yeah, that idea that they are robots in disguise. I mean, they broke through that sometimes. I mean, it's not like humans were completely unaware that there were giant robotic transformers around, but at least they seemed surprised when the Decepticons came crashing through their power factory, you know, their electric plant or something.
Well, at the end of the day, robot in disguise, hey, here's something I recognize, not a, I didn't mean that to rhyme either.
And because, I mean, it was the first season, they didn't know exactly if they were going to get a second season, per se. The stakes were way higher in season one. It actually seemed like, you know, there was some sort of, that the fate of the Earth was, you know, in the balance. And yes. Watching it today, still, that, I mean, that comes across. Those episodes do, to me, still, they're not my favorite episodes by any stretch, but I think they are the most cohesive and clear and coherent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can watch those first 16 episodes, and you have a pretty complete story going on.
Yeah, because by season three, we got, and once again, my favorite of them, we got stuff like Nightmare Planet, which is basically, hey, Nightmare on Elm Street's popular. You know, why do we need the Transformers to fight nightmares? You know, it did stray away from the core concept.
Yeah, you know, that's why I like season two the best, is you have so many different story types and so many characters. Like, one of my favorites is the God Gambit.
Yeah, but those suck because those weren't 1984. So,
yes, and sticking on topic,
let's shoot out the fire.
Speaking of 84, we had a lot of MacGuffins in the show.
God,
power chips, hypno trips, driving to Burma from Portland.
Awesome time.
Driving to the Antarctic.
Driving to the Antarctic.
Ship chase. Some of your general
favorite MacGuffins, or just weird little things that just came out of nowhere in the show that were never like replicated as far as toys go, or as far as things we've seen since. Rob, why don't you take that one?
I think Chip Chase in general is not just any MacGuffin you need, any plot, any superpower, anything. It's like, hey, this teenage handicapped kid knows more than the top scientists in the world. He's stronger than, he can rip a floppy in half with his bare.
Yeah, super strong upper body strength.
He's a handicapped. Yes, he's a handicapped kid who, you know what? I'm standing up right now. It's like, this is a super powered individual. So that's probably, you know, you got Weather Dominator, that's G.I. Joe. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Might
but
as
you
well
got,
be Transformers.
It's the same show. But you got this super-powered kid, and you stop and go, what's the deal with Spike? Why isn't Chip the main kid?
Exactly. I honestly felt the same way. I mean, it just seems like Spike was the first, the lead human, because he was the first one we saw, which is really the reason, because that's the way they wrote the show.
And once again, illegal child labor laws, what? Because they're at a construction site.
He's working for his dad.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this is totally against the law, even in 1984. Hey, how about this really positive, awesome kid here named Chip? Why do we need the Autobots? He can rip a floppy in half.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty much true. But yeah, there were quite a few of those MacGuffins. It's easy storytelling, though. Because, like, for example, Heavy Metal War. They use the power chip rectifiers to explain how they're able to pass the strength, you know, from their powers from each of the Decepticons to Megatron. It's like it's a shorthand way of just trying to make that happen. It's a plot device that's easy to understand, and it's just, I don't want to say it's lazy writing, it's smart writing. But, you know, it's one of those things that they came up with power chip rectifier probably, you know, over lunch, you know, eating a sandwich. I'm being wrong, Rob. Power chip rectifier.
Oh, what's that?
So I mean, it's probably something like that. But the cool thing is, you know, think of all the fan fiction and all of the thoughts and
overly thought out.
And internet arguments that have happened for things like that somebody literally just thought of while eating a sandwich or while sitting on the can while they were writing that show. And, you know, even though it's smart writing, we still remember it today.
Well, what are they going to do for 20 minutes? It's like, hey, what is Superman doing? Someone's robbing the bank. He has to come down and save the day. You know, hey, what are the Autobots doing? Well, the Decepticons are robbing a bank. They got to stop them. You know, it's just they have to do something other than, well, there you go, transforming again.
Well, it's funny because Brian brings up a good point in that it's a silly little plot device, right? in, say, something like the Power Chip Rectifiers, where it's a silly little plot device, but then it forces you to expand upon it as a viewer, and that's what creates these arguments down, you know, as you get older, is that, well, that means everyone had to have a power chip, which means that everyone had to have some sort of power, which means why do they have also a superpower on top of being able to be giant alien robots to turn into things?
Well, this guy's really strong. And this guy shoots glue.
I mean,
this guy can swim.
The thing I never got, and I don't want to delve too far into Heavy Metal War, but like Rumble and Frenzy, they can cause earthquakes. They had those gigantic hammer things, but Megatron didn't need a gigantic hammer thing. He used his finger or his fist to do the same thing. That just, I don't know. That just seemed, you know, even silly to me when I was even, you know, 5 years old.
What always got me? Go ahead, Don.
Go ahead, Rob.
I say, what always? I'm John right now. Thank you. This is John. Their hands would soup up in their arms, and then tool of the needed day would pop out like saw blade, welding torch, whatever. What got me, and I always noticed this when I was a kid. It was the episode right after Morty Meets the Eye. The name's escaping me. Where Optimus and Megatron just punch
Oblivion.
Not that one. It's maybe an episode or two later. They literally are just fist fighting the entire episode. Like, at one point, Optimus is like, got your Megatron, and punches him.
I mean, Heavy Metal War is them fighting for a good chunk of the episode.
Well, they're pretty much just punching each other throughout the episode, and he corners them in a cave, and Megatron's peering around. He's about to sneak up an attack on Optimus. His hand, the one his gun's on, sucks up in his hand, and a saw blade comes out. And even as a kid, I was like, that's the arm with the gun. What? Why is he bothering having a saw blade come out of his hand when he's got the jump on him with the cannon?
Do we want to hold off on comic stuff until the second part? Because I want to talk a little bit more about the season one cartoon if we have a second.
Yeah. I figure we'd finish this up and wrap it and kind of do this as like a preview piece for the 15th show.
So what's everyone's favorite episode from season one?
Oh.
I can tell you mine. I have a stupid reason, but...
All right, we'll start with you.
It's Roll For It. And the reason it was my favorite is because it was the one that I had on VHS that I bought the Family Home Entertainment version of from the video store down the road when it was going out of business. And I probably watched it more than any single episode other than probably The Return of Optimus Prime, Rebirth, or Dark Awakening. Like, I mean, that's one of the reasons I love Chip Chase so much. I just enjoy watching it. I can just sit down and zone out and not think while watching it. There are very few episodes of Transformers that I can just shut my brain off with. But I can just sort of, I don't know, just find my happy place and watch that episode. I love it.
Don?
Go ahead. I'm trying to narrow it down.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list of the episodes just trying to think of... Ultimate Doom... Or Heavy Metal War. I mean, Ultimate Doom is a group. I know it's three episodes, but it kind of sells you on everything. It sells you on the kind of alien, war that's come to Earth, and it goes back and forth to Cybertron, and it features a whole bunch of the characters.
It's probably the most epic Transformers episode, period, in my mind.
Or series of episodes, yes. And then it has the human element, but it's really well done. With the exception of the wrench thing, which...
But I mean, even comparing it to later episodes...
I didn't know that's your wrench.
But even comparing it to like later arcs, like Five Faces of Darkness or, Rebirth, it's way more believable, I guess is a way of putting it. It takes itself more seriously. And because of that, I think it holds up better. I love Rebirth. It's probably my favorite episode. Plural, but Ultimate Doom, I mean, it's one of those that people remember to this day.
I think Heavy Metal War as a kid probably appealed to me the most just because it was one of those ones you could always reenact as a playing with whatever characters you had. Somebody could be the leader figure and be that guy. But I think as an adult, I think, Ultimate Doom.
Ultimate Doom is basically a 60s drive-in sci-fi movie in Transformers form.
It really is.
And you're saying, it's really selling itself? So were they, because they're like, look, I know it's a paper plate glued to a stick. We are going to sell this paper plate glued to a stick. They were like, make this work. And they, you know those guys in the studio looking around like, hey, we got something, guys. You know?
Well, if I had to choose, it's really, Heavy Metal War is one of my favorites because you've got everybody involved, pretty much, and you get the Constructicons introduced. But I think I'm going to go with SOS Dinobots, just because
Dinobots.
It introduced the Dinobots, which I think no matter the generation, no matter what level you came in on Transformers, the Dinobots strike a chord with everybody, no matter their incarnation. It's just seeing them transform for the first time, seeing them, like Slag saying, which one's friends? One's with face like this, I think. And that's all the reason he needs.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. But I am going to give a runner-up to Plague and Insecticons just for one line. When Optimus takes the tanker and says, Megatron, catch.
Yeah.
That is a simple but brilliant, I love that scene.
Not to mention the point when Skyfire, he closes his door on Spike and you see Spike's eyes bulge as part of the animation error.
I don't remember that. I need to get back.
Skyfire's taking them off to where they're going, and Spike is just leaning out going, hey, Dad, I'll be right back. And the door shuts, and Spike is in the door like it cuts him in half. And he's still there talking, and when the minute it closes, his eyes bulge like, bloop, like some guy was animating. He's like,
thinking about my favorite episode, I just paused to think, do I have an episode from season one that I don't like? And I actually had to go to the TF Wiki to see if I was missing an episode in my mental rundown, and I'm not. There's not an episode in season one that I dislike, and that's the only season that I can say that about. That maybe if that was the Transformer series, if we never got another season after that, that would be the only series that I could say that there's not an episode that I don't like. It may be the only season of any Transformers episode that there's not a single episode that I don't like.
It had an overwhelming arc, too. Like, it had a beginning and an end. You know, they were like, okay, the show's over. Oh, we got another season? We'll make it work.
Well, probably, if I had to pick not a hated episode, but a weakest episode, probably Fire on the Mountain.
People are going to hate you for that.
Well, I mean, it's just, they finally decide to dig up Skyfire, God knows how long after the Fire in the Sky, and Megatron creates a weapon that he can't move from that one location. It's just...
Shh, you're not supposed to think.
Okay, so before we wrap this up for our first inaugural episode of TF-101, let's just go with one fun question. And this is a fun one for me, because I hear it when I listen to RFC, and you guys are all from the South. So the name of the show is...
The Transformers.
I always feel like my friends from the South always stress the S as a C, so it's like Transformers, whereas up here it's Transformers, like it's a Z.
Transformers.
We do, yeah. We stretch out our A's down here, like our A's and our E's.
I just say Transformers. It's just a short S.
It's Transformers and it's Star Trek, and it's, I like going to Walmart to buy my tobacco. My e-cigs and my.
I'm going to vape, boy. Don't mind if I vape. All right.
I'm going to vape, and I'm going to go to my
that is
trailer.
Cotton candy.
And I'm going to vape in my trailer with my.
Well, I say I'm going to go have breakfast.
So. Breakfast. Hey, I'm going to get some eggs.
Y'all seen that new episode of Transformers Prime? that one with that Insecticon lady, that spider lady. You know her, man. She's bad. Woo!
Scared
me.
We are setting Southern Heritage back worse than the Dukes of Hazzard.
Man, the Dukes of Hazzard was an awesome show.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I'm just saying
I want a steam hammer or whatever it was they used to launch that car with. I want to launch my Sonata on the way to Chicago. That's how we're starting off, Don.
Hey, Brian, you got a great drop out of that, too. Brian just saying we're setting Southern Heritage back 100 years or something like that just now. You pull that out for a future clip. All right, so let's wrap here. I want to thank everyone for joining us for the inaugural episode of Transformers 101 presented by Radio Free Cybertron and TFU.info. I'm your host, Anthony Brucali. You can catch me on Twitter at TFU_info. And our guest, Brian Kilby. Brian, how can they get in touch with you?
Wherever they watch this at.
tfradio.net.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter at bkilby. That's
okay.
That's an at symbol and the letter B and K and I-L-B-Y. At bkilby.
And Don, I know this one. It's at hmrc4eva.
R.
R?
No, it's
oh,
not
it's R-C.
Eva, forever.
Forever.
Oh, it's not.
That's when he starts getting sassy about it.
Oh, yeah, forever.
Does he snap his fingers when he does it?
He just did. I think we got a new thing.
Yeah. I don it again.
Oh, Don.
And Rob?
Y'all guys, you can check me out Twitter and Tumblr. It's
at
RoboRobSpringer. So, yeah. It's like my name plus the pseudonym.
All right. Well, then let's we'll wrap here. And thanks to Brian for this. And happy 15th anniversary to ROC. And we'll now send you. Are we going back to the show? Or you
yeah,
just...
we're going back to the show.
All right.
We're going to go get our learners.
Back to the live show. I'll be listening to this on my commute.
Fantastic.
RFC will be back after these messages.
Radio Free Cybertron will return after these messages.
Jet formation!
Jet transformation!
Transformer!
The aerial bots are taking their shot! Livable plastic combaticons! They can all change and be rearranged! To form a super robot, Superion! The combaticons are roaring! Unstarted roar! Here's one metamorph in Duragus! They all combine and kick Superion behind as a big bad battle in Bruticus!
That was brutal!
No! That was Bruticus!
Transformer Generation 2 aerial bots and combaticons each sold separately.
We now return to Radio Free Cybertron.
Yes, this is your host and friend, Brian Kilby, with this special Radio Free Cybertron mini-sode. So, this is our 15th anniversary show. I first posted RFC back in October 15th, 1999. And famously, my friend Jason said after sampling the first episode that it was 9 minutes of his life that he would never get back. You know, it's kind of funny. Back when I started doing RFC, people thought that a dude sitting behind a microphone talking about his hobbies was weird. And it wasn't something that anybody wanted on the internet. Maybe that's true. Maybe it was the quality of the show. It certainly was lacking for the time. But more often than not, people thought that the concept of, you know, this internet radio show, that it wouldn't work. And I certainly think that time has proven those people wrong. It's kind of interesting. I still go back and try to find those comments so I can just, like, dance on the grave of those people who are most certainly still alive, but I have no idea who they were. I just know that I would get the random email or the random message on a message board. It's like, this is a dumb idea. Maybe it is. Maybe it still is. But you know what? By God, we're still doing it. So yeah, Radio Free Cybertron started back in October 1999 with a pilot episode that originally aired only briefly, and I ended up taking it down, and I basically tweaked the show and posted it again about a month later in a slightly new format. But that first episode is still available on the internet, and it's pretty terrible, I have to admit. So the show has changed quite a bit over the years. Of course, we've talked about it before, but when I first started doing the show, it was just me and the microphone. And we started tacking on more people, but still mostly in their discrete little segments that they would do. And we'll get into that in just a minute. But I would actually record some segments myself. And I was able to dig out some original segments from back in back from that time period. And I actually just wanted to go ahead and revisit some of those because I really, really think that that it bears paying attention to and just to see why we no longer do these. So the first that I want to jump to is a segment that we called News from Cybertron.
news from Cybertron.
Another round of the Happy 99 bug is going around, and Optimus Prime has recommended all Cybertronians get their virus software updated. Megatron tried to issue a rebellious counterstatement, but halfway through he turned bluer than Soundwave, and the word abort, retry, fail appeared in his eyes. Meanwhile, in the techno-organic portion of the multiverse that is Cybertron, Nightscream spontaneously became a femme. Bob Skeer is simply giggling, but it is assumed that this is some sort of odd scriptwriter thing. In sports, the Quintesson-funded Slave Sharktacon Unit No. 23 Energon Ball Team was soundly thrashed by a team of Cheetor Rodimus and Ultra Magnus. Said Cheetor, it was partly centuries of repression and partly the fact that those sharks are really wimps out of the water. The attempted Quintesson riot and outrage over defeat caused little damage as the Quints are slow and physically weak. Finally, the rec.toys.transformers.moderation team continues to deny they are using Bronze Remains as a server, said moderation spokesman Daniel Suave. We deny we are using Bronze Remains as a server, and if we were, we'd be using Unix, not NT. Daniel was promptly shot. Send all get well cards to ahsdreamwalker@home.com. See, that's who submitted the news item to us back in the day. So, I actually really enjoyed doing that, but it was hard to keep up. Thankfully, we had a lot of good submissions from fans and from people who were at least part-time contributors to the show. I also want to do one that's demonstrably worse. I think this segment is absolutely, positively the worst segment that we've ever done, and it will be more than obvious as to why. Let's jump to Bad Poets Corner. Today's poem is entitled History. History. Robots in disguise, fighting for their lives, cars and planes, lots of pain, Autobots talk a lot, Decepticons laugh on and on. Robots in disguise, fighting for their lives, more than meets the eye. Yeah, that was terrible. So there's a reason, again, that we do not do that. So, you know, we actually have done quite a few segments over the years, and a couple that I wanted to mention that we no longer do. Back in the day, we did a trivia segment, which was primarily a Name That Clip. RatTrap007, who was a contributor to the show back in the day, also did a trivia segment where he actually asked questions. This was, of course, before the TF Wiki, and now a trivia section would be almost impossible to do. We sort of tried to reverse that with Stump Monzo, which was something that we did not long after we came back from back in the day. And that was actually a really fun segment to do, but after Monzo lost... let me go into the point of the show. So everyone knows Monzo. He is, you know, Transformers fan extraordinaire. He's one of the top Transformers fans in respect to knowledge, I would say. He's renowned for his Transformers knowledge. And of course there are other fans out there, like, you know, Chris McFeely and Protoman, who are, you know, up there with Monzo. And of course the first two people to actually stump Monzo were Chris McFeely and Protoman. So we also had, actually, Chris McFeely had a segment back in the day that he did with JD Church, which was the TF Wiki Spotlight. I really enjoyed that. I would love to do that again. Basically, he would cover each week a TF Wiki article that was of note or something that he found interesting while editing the topic, and that was pretty good. But really early on in the show, it had a really, really loose format. I would get bored. I would frequently get bored. And I would try to entertain myself doing the show. Sometimes it was almost a troll. For example, I came up with a character that I called the computer. The computer was, he was there for a second voice. And he was a computer program that... he kind of got a life of his own, And I still have people to this day who miss the computer. And he would host the show from time to time. And in one episode, he actually took over the world. It was kind of sad.
Happy 15th anniversary, fat boy. Ha ha ha. It's me, your old friend, the computer. I'm wishing you, Goldie, John, Rob, Rattrap 007, Tom Cadex, Turin, and whoever else is on this crappy show a happy 2007. I was hoping you would have lost your virginities by now. Ha ha ha.
Dude, Turin's not on the show. I don't even remember Tom Cadex's name, and this is 2014, not 2007.
2014. Jesus.
See, he was kind of a dick. But people love that. I don't really know why. Also, back in the day, back when we first started doing this, not long after we started the Transformers the Movie parody, and I don't know why we started it. I think it really was birthed from a discussion on Altoys Transformers, if I had to guess. Most likely involving Zobivor and Turin. Turin wrote the script. It was mostly... I didn't know at the time, because I was ignorant. It was stuff that he had plucked from Monty Python, and Zob did most of the voices. It was really, really, really innovative when we started doing it, but we've done four parts in 15 years, and we're like halfway through the movie. I'm honestly doubting that it'll ever be finished. But it went on to inspire folks like Dr. Smoove specifically. I remember reading on the internet where he cited that was one of his inspirations for doing all of his Transformers animations. I think it was probably one of those, well, if these guys are doing it, you know, we can certainly do that too. But, you know, there is a direct lineage between his material and the parody that we did. What we did, though, was super innovative. I mean, not long after RFC came out, I started seeing other Transformers internet radio show. There was one Transformers internet radio show which popped up 2 weeks after RSC, considering there were basically no other podcasts, I'll say in quotes, on the internet at the time. It was really painfully obvious that it was and it was admittedly so, just a knockoff of RFC, which is, you know, flattery is the best form of flirtation. What's the phrase? No, it's imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. But, you know, not long after that, other shows popped up. I remember a comic book show showed up about 6 months after. RFC wasn't the first podcast, but certainly there were not many before. And, of course, podcasts didn't exist back then because the iPod didn't exist, and neither did iTunes, and RSS was really in its infancy. It was still in beta or alpha at that point, and wasn't being used for podcasts or for distributing audio. It was really only being used in test. But we certainly, if we're not the first internet podcast, we are certainly one of the first, far and away. One area of innovation, which I believe has been cited, XV, who went by Goldie back then, Goldimus Prime, was one of the first people to actually do toy reviews in a format other than text. Typically, they were text and or photos. But his reviews really served the template for what became the YouTube video of today. All these YouTubers who are out there reviewing Transformers toys or toys in general are pretty much just following the template that he set forth, like, 14 or 15 years ago. It's kind of crazy when you think about it, but it's true. Speaking of Goldie, we've had lots of contributors over the years, and many of them have, are still co-hosts today. For example, Rob Springer started back in the day. John Luna was an original host. XV was an original host. Our friend JD first came on in the year 2000 on a few episodes, and, you know, our friends Tim and Heath also guested from time to time. My dear friends Gabe and Hoop who Hoops never hosted another podcast on the show, but he did on the network, but he did host a segment on RFC called Point the Blame. He was on there back then. He actually, with Gabe, actually hosted a few episodes. Gabe would go on later to host the MMA show that we did for a short time here on the TF Radio Network. Matrix Prime was a contributor. You may know him from TF Wire. He went on to form that podcast in 2005 or so. In fact, actually, RFC pretty much went silent after 2004. Things slowed to a crawl. I had a really bad stretch of time between 2000 and 2002. In 2000, I had my brother who lived at home with us. He died unexpectedly. A few months later, my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and he lived about 10 months. And then, oh gosh, about 8 months after that, my mom died. So I went from basically being a person living in a home of four to being on my own. So that really complicated getting the show out. To cope with all of that stuff, I pretty much ended up working like 80 hours a week between two jobs to, one, make ends meet, and, two, pay for toys, but three, just to get my mind off of things. So there weren't that many episodes between 02 and 04. And after 04, we mostly went silent. We had basically an episode a year. Some episodes might actually not have been posted, but they were recorded. I know that Rob did an episode back in 05. I actually did an episode that was in place to commemorate the 2005 Transformers movie, the 1986 movie, which took place in 2005. But we actually came back full-time in 2009 because J.D. Church, he wanted to be on a podcast, and he suckered me into bringing RFC back. The show that came back, even though I consider it a direct lineage in the same show, it did have a different format. Back in the late 1990s and early 2000s, I didn't have broadband internet. I didn't have Skype. I didn't have the means to record video like I do today. So it became more of a round table than less of an editorial type show. And I think it's better for it. I think the show today, obviously the show today is much better than the show that we did back then, even though it was still pretty innovative, but the content's much better. But all that really goes to say is it's been a really crazy fun ride doing this. I've made a lot of great friends. I've made a lot of friends. People that, I consider family. I've made those friends through the show. I've connected with fans over the years, tens of thousands of people who listen, who tell us that they love the show. People that I've met at conventions. It's really been great. I just want to say, to you, the fans, we really do appreciate you for being there and for, connecting with us. We don't do this, or I don't do this. I've never done this just to get my opinion out there or just to say what I think. It's about connecting with people. And that's entirely the reason that I've always done this. Anybody can, do a podcast and sit and rant and rave and speak nonsense for 30 minutes or an hour and post it and get some listeners, but building an audience, building a relationship with you, that's always been my goal. And I put a lot of time and effort and heart, and I always have, into the show to make sure it's the best darn Transformers podcast going. And, it was 15 years ago, and I still feel that it is today. And I want to thank you for, inspiring me to do it. So, here's to another 15 years. I doubt I'll still be doing this in 15 years, but we'll see. But, God, I hope I'm not. God, I'll be so old in 15 years. Maybe I'll be on an island, retired. Heck, actually, if I was rich and, independently wealthy, and if I owned my own island, I would probably still be doing this. I would probably be doing it over satellite internet, just like I was doing it in 1999. What goes around comes around.
I think we in big trouble.
Not to worry. Here comes Skylakes.
Meet Skylakes. This ferocious motorized Autobot triple changes from Space Shuttle to Bird and Lynx and then combines to form Skylakes.
Honey King's attacking. Skylakes, stop him.
The Transformers. Batteries not included from Hasbro.
So we're back. Okay. Oh my God, what a long show. Let's take this sucker home, our 50th anniversary show.
As we enter our third hour.
Yes.
By the time we get done this show, it'll be our 16th anniversary.
True. Let's see here. So this is from our pal, Computron 2. Let's see here. Hi, RFC homies. So, do you think that a Transformers movie would be better if Marvel was involved in some fashion? Yes. Would it be just as amazing as the others, or would it be superior? What do you think?
A Marvel Studios Transformers movie.
We had a Marvel mm-hmm. Studios Transformers movie in, what, 1986?
Yep.
So,
well, that was a different Marvel Studios.
So, P.S. over the 15th anniversary show, I was thinking you should bring back TF Rewind in a big way. I agree. You should review Transformers the movie. I think we've done that. And let's see.
The 2007 one.
No, this is the 86 one.
Let's do the Beast Wars
movie. I know,
movie.
I'm just correcting him.
the one with Bad Spark.
Yeah, that was a great movie, wasn't it, guys?
Didn't we do that?
Be honest with you.
Bad Spark.
I mean, Rhinox did fart, and that's in the movie.
That's true. So, would we think that a Marvel-led Transformers movie would be better? Obviously.
Mm-hmm. It couldn't be
It would be
any
interesting,
worse.
At least. I mean, it would be interestingly different to get a Transformers movie in that style.
Only if it had the same people responsible for the Marvel movies, and they just didn't contract it out after they had the license.
I mean, yeah, right. Like, basically people who care and want to have a cohesive universe that makes sense. That's
like,
you know,
get the people that did Iron Man 2 to do a Transformers movie. I'm right there with
you. Yeah, exactly. You. Done.
And something interesting that if we have Marvel in on this, we could have a movie with Neo Knights in it.
And Circuit Breaker.
It's with Circuit Breaker instead of having to use Circuit Smasher.
Hmm.
And, you know, then you'd finally get the toy, probably, because the
movie.
Merchandising rights would
exactly.
be...
And the Robot controlling. Master. What about it?
And
no. yeah,
things just wouldn't be too ridiculous under the people that made a movie
the
with a machine gun-wielding raccoon.
Yeah, the Scraplets. Mm-hmm. The mechanic?
The mechanic.
The mechanic, yeah.
I think this would be great.
Like, you could totally have, like, you know, the Neo Knight and then Circuit Breaker, the Robot Master, and the mechanic... Like, you know, hero and villain human groups, too, to be the relatable characters around the Transformers.
Yeah. Perfect.
Heck, the mechanic could create the Scraplets as a weapon.
I just want them to be background characters, like all the visual cues and Guardians were, like Adam Warlock's cocoon off to the side, stuff like, just, one walks by and goes, oh, dude, did you catch that? That was the mechanic.
But you know
stuff like
you
that.
You know what wouldn't have, though? Spider-Man.
Oh.
Yeah.
Snooze.
But it,
yeah, well, better to do without Spider-Man than have Sony make a Transformers movie.
True.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a subplot of a Marvel-led Transformers movie with Spider-Man and Gears trying to infiltrate the Decepticon
HQ?
Can
you imagine a subplot in a Transformers movie?
Can you imagine
well,
a, plot
imagine
in
a main plot in a Transformers movie? What are you talking about?
Well, first let's get the basic plot, then we'll go for the subplots.
That'd be great. Okay. Next question. Hello, gentlemen. I noticed you guys mentioned the Guild in episode 385, but no one was able to get the name right.
I think I did.
Maybe myself or an associate can do an interview to correct that small problem. By the way, the cannons will be on display at TFCon and NJCC.
What's the Guild and what's the cannons?
Yeah,
the Guild of Concocious Intent, they're doing upgrades for one of the Masterpiece cars.
Thanks for your time.
I don't remember.
I don't even remember.
Happening.
I don't remember.
We'll be at TFCon, so I guess we can talk to them.
We talked about it last week or the week before.
I can't read. I can't. Rob, no. Please, no. Okay, so XV, you obviously know what we're talking about, because I don't remember even mentioning that.
Yeah, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and none of you could pronounce the name Guild of Concoctious Intent.
Gotcha. That's a horrible
what
name.
What do they do, or what is their function?
This is specifically talking about canon upgrades for one of the Masterpiece cards. I don't remember which one specifically, but...
Wheeljack, but also compatible with Sideswipe.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Double shoulder cannons for Wheeljack.
Okay. So there you go.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now. I'm looking at this story. Yeah. Yes, sweet. So
it was only...
You know what I remember?
Memorable to me because, like this says, nobody could actually pronounce the name.
Yeah. Rob. You know
what I remember from a few weeks ago, guys? Rhinox hit Megatron with a car.
Yes, I was hoping.
Oh.
Very nice. So
I was hoping.
You know, I had an idea for a topic, but no.
Not at this point.
Not this week. So, guys, thank you so much. And I really, again, want to thank our listeners for being awesome and hanging out with us. And I want to thank Harbor Freight Tools for having this $10 megaphone.
I approve us going.
Yes.
Actually,
it's enriched this podcast in ways I can't even describe.
I know.
I can. See, Butthole Surfers is one of my favorite bands, and he has a tendency to use a megaphone all the time. So I'm like, Brian, sing it, buddy.
I'm trying to think of that one Butthole Surfer song that I can remember. It's the one about dying.
Well, a lot of them are about that. They're Pepper. High most of the time.
Pepper,
that's right. It is Pepper.
I'm watching my language, so I'm not like...
Well, they are
I thought you were making up the name. That's an actual group.
That was an actual band. Thank you, 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But guys, thank you for all of you who've been around for most of that, i.e. XV and... I mean Goldie and Rob Springer.
Hi, this is Rob Springer.
And John's still here. So, John, when was your first episode, by the way? Do you remember how far in?
Of this podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Like,
you were the first. You're not counting me, you were the first or second person on the show.
Yeah.
It was either you or Turin that was first.
I think he may have been before me. I want to say he was maybe doing segments right before me.
And then Goldie, i.e. XV, i.e. Chris, was probably next.
Yeah. Goldie?
Mm. Yeah, his screen name was Goldimus Prime back then.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Goldimus Prime, and I'm going to review.
And
his joints are stiff.
And in the segment that I did earlier on, in the pre-recorded segment, I talked about some areas of innovation that we did. And XV's reviews were one of the most innovative things we did.
Mm-hmm.
We were way ahead of the curve. Just too bad the show sucked back then.
Well,
ahead of its time.
I
bet you could rerun an ATT Buzz and it would still be accurate.
I know.
Hey, this is John with TFA Buzz.
Same topics.
This week, somebody posted a Michael Bay movie post. All hell broke loose for 3 days straight.
Rob Springer, do you remember your first time on the show?
Well, I remember submitting a whole bunch of them and you didn't play them. And
I've never been good about following up on stuff like that.
Well, the thing is also, FTP and me were not friends at the time.
And you had to use FTP at that time because mm-hmm. we didn't have... Because before Gmail, everyone had small mailboxes.
Brian,
yeah.
Sometime around the year 2000... Some stranger has a whole bunch of MP3s about random Transformer stuff, and it's not you.
Yeah, probably.
I intended it to be, but I was like, I remember, like, none of this looks like an RFC folder. And you're like,
throwing stuff on there.
I still have, that was probably my server. I used that for a lot of different things. I probably have those files somewhere in a backup.
No, I'm telling you, at one point I did realize I uploaded some to another server.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because we know how good of a typer I am. And this is before little red lines go, oh, crap, I misspelled something.
Yeah, thank you, Firefox, for that innovation.
Among others.
Yeah. But yeah, so 15 years, it's changed quite a bit. Back in the day, it was basically, each segment was discrete and it was one person. Mm-hmm. Unless I wanted to spend the money on a phone card and call someone up and record them over the phone.
I do remember where I was when you first mentioned it wasn't ATT, it was a offshoot group, I think, when you first mentioned the idea of doing the show.
Rec Toys Transformers Moderated.
Yes, one of the recs. I remember I had just literally done a project on internet radio for one of my marketing classes at school, at college. Like, I had a big project board and all that, internet radio, because I was just putting buzzwords together to make a passing grade, and it worked.
And internet radio back then was streaming.
It was the future.
Internet radio then was a terrestrial radio station having its stream on a real server going out over the internet. There was literally no content that was original for the internet that was audio. I mean, there were a couple of things, but not many.
Literally, my professor at the time was so stuck in the fad of the .com boom and all that all you had to do for a project was say internet anything and you passed. So I literally did just put, I think, like, I cut stuff out of a music magazine. Like, one was an ad for Prodigy Music. That was the site. And I just put band posters on it, and I passed. That day later, I was watching two guys, a girl in the pizza place, or pizza, whatever. Do you remember that show with Ryan Reynolds and Doug?
Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah, RFC was on. And I was sitting there kind of daydreaming about the prospect of internet radio and, like, how it would work and all that. And I didn't even pay attention to the show. And I got up, sat down on my laptop, logged online, because you remember...
Oh, yeah, I remember.
20 minutes later, and Outlook downloads, and here is Brian Kilby asking if anyone wants to start a Transformers radio show. And then I lose my connection.
Well, I lost my connection.
No, that was it. It was Earthlink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as you remember, like, now, this is the future.
Brian actually went out and did the one thing that Transformers fans are always asking for. He added diecast.
I did. That's true.
That's the number one thing, everyone. If you look at any of the forums, they're always saying, add some diecast.
I'm kidding.
But, you know, it's always been a bad idea back then and today.
Diecast is bad.
I'm going to admit something here, Andrew. Diecast, you know, I love you, buddy. I was a little disappointed meeting you at Shardicon because I had in my head you were just like this 14-year-old grungy kid with long black hair and all that. Because I'd only heard your voice, and I don't think I ever looked at your picture on Facebook or anything. And I was like, oh, cool, Diecast is coming. That guy's great. Now, who's this guy?
Who's the guy with the neon yellow hair?
It took me like a second because I think I lifted you like 20 feet off the ground and I realized it was you.
Yeah, I think Kim's reaction was, wait, he's diecast? He's normal.
I literally was like, you guys, like, I was saying hi to everybody. We were going out to eat, and I said, oh, hey, Melivar. Yeah, you're in the chat. Okay, cool. I haven't been on the show live in a few years. I've been working night shift. And I was like, who's this guy? No, like, oh, you're diecast. And I think I scared you at that moment.
Yeah, Kim really likes diecast, especially because...
Who doesn't?
Well, of course, everybody does. But Kim really likes diecast because, in a group, he's the other normal person.
Yeah, and then to make all of y'all feel younger, you asked me to be on the show.
Yeah, well, we did.
You and I, I'm riding on you piggyback. We're gonna be like Master Blast.
Your first appearance on the show. Your first appearance on the show was in Don. It was in John's dining room.
Yeah, BotCon 2012.
In 2012.
Oh, and Rob, just as a side note, I still use Earthlink for my email.
Does it still run?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mindspring, but they're bought by Earthlink.
Oh, okay.
Hey, well, Don, it's okay, because in college I applied to work at Mindspring. Didn't get hired.
But yeah.
it's been a crazy, crazy wild ride we've been on. It's
And real talk, in front of the audience, I totally can't wait to see all you guys, almost all you guys next week.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
It is.
I wish I could bring Massey. I know he's going to be disappointed in not being able to attack every single one of y'all, but
Print out a little picture and carry it around with you. This is Massey, everybody.
Make copies and you can throw them at people.
It's probably good for all of us that Shardicon got canceled, because you know Don would have definitely just brung Massey over, because that's only like an hour ride
for
him.
I totally got it. Someone get to work on this. Instead of flat Stanley, we'll have a flat Massey. and it'll be the RSC Flat Massey. They can print it out from our site and take pictures of their Flat Massey wherever they go.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what Flat Stanley is?
No.
It's where you make a Flat Stanley. It's like a picture of Stanley. You can either draw your own or someone's giving it to you, and you carry him around for whatever and take a picture of him wherever you go and whatever you do.
Who's Stanley?
It's just the name they gave it.
Oh. Is that like planking?
Well, it's kind of like you just... This is kind of more sensible because it's like... This is like an earlier version of photo blogging before you had a reason, because this is like dates back to at least the 80s when I first heard about it as a kid, where like it's like my day was Stanley. It's basically I'm taking a picture of what I've been doing today. You know, it's just kind of these fun little school project things. So we could have Flat Massey and everyone would be like, here I am at Walmart with my Flat Massey. Or, yeah, think about that for a second. XV's behind it. Look at that face.
Pretty awesome. So for those
of us... We'd have to do like a Flat Dawn as a companion so Flat Massey could attack it.
True. And so definitely TFCon will be fun. For those of us who can't make it, I hope we can all make it to BotCon. I'm hoping BotCon's on the East Coast. I'll be really disappointed if BotCon's not on the East Coast this year.
No, probably California again.
I'll be disappointed, but not at all surprised.
I think I'm perfectly okay with if we get like TFCon, SharderCon on the East Coast once a year.
SharderCon's not happening again, so...
I told them they have to do it, and they will do what I say.
You know, we could kind of have We could kind of have SharderCon just by going to Retro Reboot. Jake's remodeled the store. It's now two stories.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I want to go. I haven't been since he's remodeled.
I am robbing that dude.
Yeah.
You might not want to announce your intent on the most popular Transformer internet radio show.
No, it's cool. I know his dad. We're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's up, Robert?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, guys, yeah. Actually, let me go back. Let me go back because I'm reading back.
Jacob knows I love him.
Let's see here. I saw through the back scroll. Somebody wanted to know if I got the free flashlight with the megaphone, and the answer was no, because I didn't have my coupon. You know, I shouldn't talk up Harbor Freight Tools because competitor, but I really dig that place. So, but you know, I do all my home improvement shopping at Lowe's. I buy all my cheap Chinese crap at Harbor Freight Tools. Okay, so
Well, Brian, one thing is, since I'm the old man of the group, I'm going to speak for all the younger whippersnappers out there as part of the show.
Remember those rainbow suspenders?
Yeah.
Man, those were awesome.
And I'm going to say, Brian, thank you for inviting me on. Thank you for having us all here as part of the Insanity each week. I appreciate it.
And I apologize for being a jerk to each and every one of you. I'm really I'll just say I'm really hard to deal with, and these guys are awesome. So you guys are awesome.
I just compensate by being harder to deal with.
That's true.
Brian Kilby is one of my very best friends, and I love him dearly.
He can
be a jerk, and I don't care. Yeah, I love you guys.
I love you guys.
Don, put your pants back on.
That's the show. We'll see you next week.
Later.
Not live, but via tape delay. Have a good one.
Later, everybody. Take care.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons license. Any part of this podcast can and should be redistributed, but please, proper attribution is required if you know what's good for you. Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers internet radio show since 1999. 100% girlfriend free since 1999.